This week's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by the following advertisers.
Full Moon. Get ready to delve deep into the weird world of essential cult entertainment only on Full Moon's Amazon channel. Classic Full Moon and Empire Picture faves like Castle Freak, Puppet Master, Subspecies, Necropolis, Intruder, Head of the Family, Evil Bong, The Ginger Dead Man, Laser Blast, The Pit and the Pendulum, and Lurking Fear share space with a wild library of cult creepers from the legendary Blue Underground and Something Weird video labels. The Andy Sidaris and Jeff Franco collections, the Eurocin archives, Trailers from Hell, and much, much more. It's an unlimited onslaught of awesome right at your fingertips 24/7. New uncut movies are added every week, and all titles are available in the highest definition available. So get yourself over to Amazon and subscribe to Full Moon today for only $6.99 per month. Your glaze balls will never be the same again. Trust us.
Shockwaves is headed to Texas Frightmare Weekend in Dallas, Texas. This is the 14th year for the convention, and it's presented by Arrow Video. Shockwaves will be putting on a live show Saturday, May 4th at 11 a.m. in the Maverick Room. Come join us with a cup of coffee and enjoy some breakfast and chill out. We'll also be there all weekend at booths number 31 and 32. Come visit us. Come be on the show. We're going to be recording on the floor. This year's guests at Texas Frightmare include Bruce Campbell, Tim Curry, Robert Englund, Lee Majors, Meatloaf, Joe Bob Briggs, and many more. Texas Frightmare Weekend takes place May 3rd through the 5th at the Hyatt Regency DFW Airport Hotel. Come join us and say hi.
Okay, welcome to episode 141 of Shockwaves. I'm one of your hosts, Rob G, with Elric Kane.
Yeah, man, survived those mountains.
We survived the mountains.
What a hell of a trip,
guys. I had to drive into
guys.
The mountains.
It was beautiful.
Rebecca McKendry.
Hello, guys.
We traveled far this weekend. We'll get into that.
We had an adventure.
We had an adventure, which some people saw documented online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a trip.
Last but not least, Ryan Turek.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. Had a safe, restful weekend at Monsterpalooza.
At Monsterpalooza, damn you.
Dude.
Bum.
But we are all back. In fact, I was so – because we went straight – we recorded with Phil last week, and Becca Elric and I went straight to the airport.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Went there and
– on a red eye.
All night.
On a red eye. And actually, I like forgot – that it was Thursday, so yeah, I forgot to post the show.
Because
Ryan had to do it like 5 hours later.
I generally wake up at between 4:30 and 5 a.m., and that was a day that I was getting up really, really early, and I went to like go check out the show, and there was nothing there. And then, unfortunately, you know, I woke up to a very passive-aggressive email for our message on our Facebook page from somebody that was like, really disappointed, this is weak. And I was like,
that the show wasn't
wait,
up?
That the that show wasn't that up the at show, 5 a.m.?
That the show, that like they presumed that we missed an episode. They apologized, and I know you're probably listening, but just know that in the morning, I had not had my coffee yet, man.
I forgot like what day it was.
No, which I totally get.
We lost a day.
Yeah, so I scrambled to put
the
it
the red
up.
Eye, nobody slept, and then we got there, and they immediately started us, and so we, like I think we all slept for maybe 3 hours that afternoon, and then we were running, and then that night we went to like 2 a.m., and it was like I had no idea what day it was.
Also, there's turbulence on the plane, and Becca's in the middle, and everyone's asleep, kind of, and then suddenly we'd hit turbulence,
oh,
and her hands would dig into us, and her drink would knock onto my foot.
Yeah,
and there was ice everywhere. It was very exciting.
I'm great to fly with until there is turbulence, and then my world is ending, and plus it jostled me awake, too.
Like, no,
we
all of us
all
were pretty
dead
crazy.
Asleep, and then all of a sudden you just feel this, the plane just dropped.
Yeah, that was
and
scary.
I reached down and like grabbed both of them.
But I
and
love, like Elric latches on to something and won't let it go. So literally for like the rest of the day, he's like, yeah, everything's great except for when Becca dropped that ice on my shoe.
I didn't drop it. It was just sitting on the tray table in front of me. And when we dropped, it fell off my tray
petty
table.
Petty Elric is petty.
Yeah. Petty Elric.
Petty Elric.
There,
proudly.
But that all that said, the Chattanooga Film Festival was an absolute blast.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cool. It was great to see a lot of people there that listen to Shockwaves. We ended up doing Dead Right Hard Trivia,
which was an absolute blast.
That went really well.
Everybody.
That was a really fun venue for it at the Whiskey Bar or whatever.
I think
it was
the Chattanooga Whiskey Brew.
We were upstairs.
It was a long day,
but no, we had some good competitive teams. We had some familiar faces.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Then
we went to the Joe Bob show on the first night.
Joe Bob did a 2.5 hour lecture on rednecks in Hollywood.
Rednecks saved Hollywood.
Yeah, and it literally traced, not just rednecks in film, it traced the history of rednecks in America, which is great because my hometown was in every map that he showed. I was like, yay.
And what did you discover about Becca?
I discovered that we can call officially, Ryan, you'll be happy to hear, that we can officially call Becca a mountain woman.
Yes.
Because she has identified herself as a mountain woman with a PhD. And I love Dr. Mountain Woman.
I've been waiting for this moment all my life.
I know. It's big. It's a big moment, guys.
They're playing dueling banjos in the Deliverance clip. She got up and started doing the same dance as the guy.
I totally did.
What is that called, that little dance he does?
Well, I don't know about that, but the other dancing was clogging.
It was clogging.
I told you, my dad clogged at my wedding.
That's pretty cool.
It was a trip. But anyway, so we went to see that, and it traced how, even going back to the early roots of Hollywood, and even the 1930s, once we started getting into exploitation, 1938 with The Child Bride, and then how it just kind of exacerbated leading up to the 1970s when they became big blockbuster with Cannonball Run and Convoy and pretty much anything Burt Reynolds was in, and Deliverance, of course, and where it went from there.
Yeah, if you've never seen Joe Bob do his lectures, they are a must. It is just so fun and entertaining.
So different than the Shudder thing. The Shudder thing is awesome, and the little, you get these little great insights, but this is him going deep diving into a topic.
Yeah, he is super smart and definitely a professor, but also really funny. And I can't believe I have to reiterate this again, but because I took a photo out of context, which was an hour and a half into a show that people got offended by. And he even said it at the top of his show because he's like, all right, look, I'm going to say things that may be considered trigger words, but I am a satirist. He's like, I hate that term, but that's what I am. And it is. It's a character. It's a show called How, Rednecks Saved Hollywood. It's all in good fun. He's not a malicious guy by any means. It's just very intelligent. But again, it's don't go crazy over a screen grab completely out of context from a 2.5 hour show that's just meant to be fun.
But it was simultaneously him making fun of it, but then also a love letter to that culture.
In one regard,
he referred to the road I grew up on as the redneck superhighway, which I love. Go Interstate 81 in Virginia, which he called the redneck superhighway. But at the same time, everything was kind of presented with the shape of love of this group of people who rebelled against everything and kind of were like, fuck you, we're going to go do our own thing. And he raised one of the most interesting questions that I took from it was if any other group of people had been kind of bastardized and made to look that bad and they're mutants and they're inbred, there would be protests and people would be, they'd be creating coalitions to try to improve their image in Hollywood, and rednecks and what he was referring to as hillbillies are just kind of like, meh. What else? Do you think? Cool.
I didn't realize there's 50 redneck shows right now. Mm-hmm. I knew two or three, but he literally went
Swamp Loggers.
Yeah, there was one minute long rant with all slideshows where he's like, here's all the shows that are currently on air. Yeah.
Swamp Loggers, Swamp Truckers, Swamp Wives.
Yeah.
Wives of Georgia, Wives of Kentucky. And it was just
Mountain
over.
Woman.
Hilarious. Yeah. Wow. Hilarious. Really good stuff.
Oh, that's a show. Mountain Woman PhD. Who wouldn't watch that? Mountain Woman PhD. It's like a cop
show. By day, she's a doctor. Yeah. By night, she's a whore.
So it practically sells itself, guys.
It does. I would watch the show.
I would not.
Really? Well, you'd be starring in it. You wouldn't need to see it.
But yeah, the Joe Bob lecture was definitely one of the heights of my trip, just because he is so fascinating to listen to.
As soon as it ended, we kind of looked at each other going, and that was day one when we first got in. We're like, we could literally leave now.
Then
the next morning, we got to do a private show basically with him. Hopefully the recording will work out and you'll hear it someday. Oh. But it was awesome because it was to go right from the lecture style to get to just dive in. And for me, it was the main thing I wanted to talk to him about was Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was really fun to just hear him talking about this movie coming from he's from Texas. I just wanted to hear him go deep on that.
Yeah. So hopefully you'll hear that soon.
Yeah.
And we obviously got to see a lot of films there, which we'll delve into a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the one I wanted to bring up, so the other show we recorded live was with Gary Sherman, who had been on the show before, and Jeff Burr, who he lives about an hour away from where the festival took place. And that went over really well, but it was great. We got to spend a lot of time with Gary Sherman because he's coming in from Chicago and he was on our flight from mm-hmm. Chicago on. And one thing he did it on Sunday at the show, but we'd already left at that point. And so he basically offered to do it privately, which was a breakdown of Poltergeist 3's gags. Like he's got the clips, not the whole movie, but just clips from the movie, his script and storyboards, and basically he explains how the hell he did some of these in-camera tricks. And it is an incredible lesson. And in fact, he was saying during our show that Edgar Wright called him from the set of his new movie because he was trying to do a mirror gag.
No
and he's like,
way.
I watched Poltergeist 3 a dozen times. I can't figure it out. How did you do it? And he's like, okay. And they had a big Skype session so that he could explain how he pulled off these in-camera tricks. And so anyway, I think he did this lecture once for Rue Morgue in Canada, and then he did it at Chattanooga. And I encouraged him. I was like, dude, this is really amazing. And it's something that I think filmmakers of today need to see because they're not thinking like in this context. Like,
In camera practical effects,
shooting
magic.
On
it's
a
magic.
It's total magic, and it actually really was awe-inspiring. So, be on the lookout.
It goes into a little bit with on our show, but it's difficult to explain verbally.
You have to physically see it.
Yeah,
and so I think he's going to start doing that as a lecture, and so keep an eye out. We'll let you know if it starts. You know, becomes local or whatever, but. It really was inspiring.
And the live show was fun because we actually got moments of Jeff and Gary talking together about filmmaking. Just trying to get them to talk about craft. You know?
They'd met once, I think, but they didn't really know each other. Yeah. So that was kind of fun to hear them bounce
off
each other.
And it was great to meet all the people down there. And I got to introduce Vice Squad for Gary Sherman. And one thing I didn't know about the film, because, you know, you just always do a little research. I hadn't seen it in 10 years, and I love it. But I didn't realize it was shot by John Alcott, who shot Barry Lyndon and The Shining. And so you're making this sleazy L.A. like prostitution film, and it's like – fucking amazing the way the camera moves. So that was super fun. I managed to get him to sing a little bit of Neon Slime as we went out.
Nice.
So he's actually singing it to Heather Buckley, kind of a beautiful moment. But like, I would just want to hats off to both the Chris's, the Dorch family, and everyone who worked on this, because this thing is definitely a labor of love. They are definitely needing real sponsors who will commit to them because they're trying to put on horror events in a place that isn't necessarily comfortable with horror events. And I think because of that, sponsorship's always challenging. And I think anything you can do to support things like this, because this is a real deal, great genre.
And
fest.
They had so much going on there. It wasn't even just that they were showing top-notch films. Yeah. I mean, like, I worked with Dave Lawson on a class that taught people how to pitch. And they did. They also did, like, a financing class and a how to market your project class. And then even there was one night when we had an exceptional amount of biscuits throughout the day that Elric and I, we were like, we could take a lift back to the hotel, but we were like, we should probably walk because we'd had an exceptional amount of biscuits. And so we walked back to the hotel and we passed where they were doing the outdoor screening of Creature of the Black Lagoon.
Mm. Not knowing that the woman who wrote the book
would end up being our future traveling companion. So yeah, but they were doing this beautiful outdoor screening and they had events on one of the boats in Chattanooga and it was spread out over downtown and it was just remarkable. So yeah, anything you guys can do to support it, definitely do. It's wonderful. And if not, plan to go next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd go back anytime. And my only regret is that we didn't see – we were a lot busier working the fest this time than I was last year. I saw a lot of great movies last year. I saw one new movie this year.
I saw one new movie
We saw one, and then me and Rob both got to see Suburbia, which neither of us had seen.
Oh, yeah, the
Penelope Spheeris film.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
I set that one out. It's a little bleak.
Yeah, it was bleak. Punk film, yeah. Not horror, but there was a great part where a punk took a bottle and just throws it at a bus and goes, I hate buses. I was like, man, I wish our youth was more like that today.
That's punk rock, it's punk.
We've been totally quoting that the whole time.
But,
and then we had, I'll briefly detail our adventure getting back where it was pouring snow in Chicago. So we were supposed to leave on Sunday morning and they kept delaying our flight. We were just sitting in the terminal and then we sat on the plane for a while. Yeah, they had us on the tarmac.
And then deplaned.
And then they put us back in the terminal and we found out that it was pouring snow in Chicago and that they were delaying all the flights. But we couldn't change to a different flight until they formally canceled it. And then there was this discussions of us flying out of Huntsville, Alabama before the Huntsville, Alabama airport had delayed everything for tornadoes. And so we discovered that if we drove to Nashville, we would be able to get a flight out the next morning, but we would have to find a place to stay. So we
5 a.m. We'd have to go straight there.
But then Ryan sent Blumhouse helicopter to come and get us.
That's incorrect. I sent the Blummobile.
Oh, the Blummobile.
The Blummobile.
Which is a big bus, right?
No, it's a Blummobile.
It's Jason's van. Yeah,
it's Jason's van.
So we rented the greatest, what was it, an Acura that we could afford.
But I enjoyed driving through the mountains. It was actually a pretty drive.
It was lovely.
Mallory O'Meara came with us, and she wrote the book on Millicent Patrick, I think.
Yeah, The Creature of Black Lagoon.
And she'll be a future guest for sure.
Definitely.
She was a great sport, and it was fun traveling with her. And it was
we
just,
partied. We listened to music.
Yeah.
We were on the same flight. And so Nashville is 2 hours away, so we did that drive. But we were warned, like, you better get, because otherwise
winter's
you're going to get
coming.
Trapped.
Winter's coming. Yeah, they kept saying, they were like, there's tornadoes coming. And we were like, okay, well, we should leave now. And it was, like, sunny the whole way.
So
every scenario was a horror movie cliche.
Yeah.
Where we ran into every step of the way.
We kept seeing those Jesus is coming, like, hand-painted signs.
We were like, oh, man, let's hope we don't break down
here. And then we would pass these giant tanker trucks. We were, like, predicting what would be our own death. Like, is it going to be cannibal rednecks or mutants? Or is it going to be, like, a Final Destination truck thing? Like, it was
all of the above in the end.
All of them. And then we partied in Nashville.
Well, we basically had 24 hours of, basically going to be airport. So we ended up getting an Airbnb for about 3 hours, just so everyone could lie down for a few minutes and then go back to the airport. And we made it back. And then I went to the DMV.
Oh, man.
It was really depressing.
We kept telling you could do it online.
It was pretty bleak. But it was great while we did. And it was nice to get a little adventure. But these kind of festivals are, I think they're sometimes, conventions are different. I think sometimes some people see conventions as these big money-making things. Some of these film festivals are just literally only going to get by on the love of the people who run it.
Yeah.
And, I feel like there could have been more people there this year. Like, looking around, it's like, man, I hope people support this shit,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if you have a local one, go to it. But, thanks, both of the Dorch family and everyone.
Chris,
extended family.
Chris 1 and Chris 2, we love you guys.
Yeah, great people and great festival. Great city, too.
Yeah.
And while we were there, Ryan, you were in town and you got to go to Monsterpalooza.
We went to Monsterpalooza.
Report back from there.
Well, Monsterpalooza, it happens twice a year. So there's one in April. There's generally one in the spring and one in the fall. Son of Monsterpalooza is the one in the fall.
Yeah.
I got to tell you.
Smaller one, but this is
a smaller
big one.
It takes place in Burbank. The one in spring happens in Pasadena. And I got to tell you, Monsterpalooza become the horror Comic-Con of Southern California. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, this thing is giant now. I know that there were a lot of people that were surprised by how they had the fact that they had to wait in line for 2.5 hours just to get in if they did not have a ticket, you know? And so I just encourage you guys, everyone out there who's ever wanted to go to Monsterpalooza, you have to treat it like a major convention now and you have to buy your tickets in advance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I highly encourage that because
I'm a little shocked they weren't sold out.
They were
sold. They must have been.
Well, they were sold out for Saturday, but they were doing the kind of rotation, like as people come out, they'll let a few more people in. Bruce Campbell was a special guest. Paul Rubens was a guest. God, who else did I see? I saw Daniel Harris, Kane Hodder, Jim Courtney from our Halloween film. Who else? I mean, Tara Reid was there. But it just, like, the list went on and on. Bruce Campbell was fetching a 3-hour wait just to get his autograph.
Wow.
They sequestered him into his own building. Had his own section. Paul Rubens was a 2.5-hour wait for his autograph. The show floor, the dealer's room, was massive. It was double the size. A lot of great things on the show floor. As always, Monsterpalooza is more skewed towards obviously, there's a lot of horror stuff you could buy, horror movie stuff, and obviously Vinegar Syndrome was there and a couple other, cool DVD retailers, but it's very geared towards special effects and makeup effects. It's a celebration of that craft. So what you had is a lot of special makeup effects guys that had tables set up and makeup effects tutorials on the floor. Fangoria had a table set up where my good friend Amanda got her face blown off. And initially it was kind of like she said she was going to go there at, in the afternoon just for like a simple like gunshot, it sounded like. They did a full prosthetic over her face. Tate's, who did special effects for Puppet Master movie, he did it. And oh my God, she looks like she took a shotgun blast to the face.
Cool.
But Linda Blair was there and things had – she kind of raised the game in terms of – you know, the kind of photo op slash autographs, you know, opportunity by having an entire, like a little mini set from The Exorcist set up next to her table.
Oh, wow.
So you walked up to her table, you got an autograph, you paid the money, and then you would walk right into this set where there was a bed, a possessed Reagan curled up in a ball on the bed. You had Father Karras standing there. You had the window. And then she would jump on the bed with you, and you'd take a photo next to the possessed Reagan and Linda Blair.
I would have brought a prison to do some chained heat with her.
No, that I saw people get that photo, but none brought me more joy than seeing Linda Blair in the Exorcist set with Brian Fuller, Kevin Williamson, and Joshua Miller.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So I saw them at the Fangoria booth, and Josh Miller came over, and he was like, "Hey, Ryan, what's going on?" And then Kevin Williams was like, "Hey, Ryan," and Brian Fuller was like, "Hey." And I was like, "What's up, fellas?" And they're like, "Where's Linda Blair?"
Oh, wow.
And I was like, just down the way on the right hand side, and they were like, "Good to see you." And then they just took off. They were that's what they were.
Has Josh Miller ever met Linda Blair?
I have no idea.
Just so people know, his dad was obviously Father Karras, right? Is that his name in the original? Karras, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Josh Miller. Yeah. Who's on our show? Who wrote Final Girls?
Yes.
But it was wild. I mean, in terms of like the crowd control, it was pretty reasonable. You know, Friday nights are usually the nights that are a little bit more low key because people are still getting out of work. But it's also the night if you wander around, you'll find Guillermo del Toro walking around. Yeah. Sometimes J.J. Abrams pops in.
John Favreau.
Greg Nicotero and Howard Berger were walking around. You know, you just had to look in the right place. There's tons of like horror celebrities walking around and people who are in the industry who are showing their nerd roots. Like, remember one year Benicio del Toro was just like wearing a cap and sunglasses walking around. I was like, I see you.
That's cool.
But Saturday was pretty reasonable. We got there in the morning and we had one walkthrough that wasn't very crowded because they were just kind of slow trickling people in. By the afternoon, though, like 3 o'clock, it was jam-packed. But it was a blast. I mean, I walked away with way too much stuff and had a good time. So I cannot recommend Monsterpalooza enough, but you do have to – it's getting to a point where you do have to plan in advance. So if you're planning to go to Son of Monsterpalooza, it's a smaller festival. I know it's a smaller convention, but it still yields the high crowd and a lot of crowd. So,
yeah.
So and that one's next to the Burbank Marriott. So it's actually in a hotel that you can go stay in.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. Good times.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
We saw a movie at the festival.
Mm-hmm.
The one horror film we saw was at the very end. We were ambitiously thinking we were going to go to C2, but we fit in one. And it's actually one, interestingly enough, that I'm going to be doing the Q&A post-screening of in Texas Frightmare.
Oh, really?
So it was good for me to be able to see it because I'm going to just guess this might have been a better screening facility. Who knows? But either way, it's nice to be able to get to see the movie in advance of that. It's called The Dead Center.
The Dead Center.
By Billy Sinise.
Mm-hmm.
It stars, mostly unknown people, but Shane Carruth from Primer and Upstream Color, the director of those,
is one of the main stars of it.
And it's a very realistic, gritty a demon possession, demon in court.
I don't really know. Questionably say demon.
Yeah. I'll just do the intro and then you can, it basically opens with, this is kind of the hook. You watch a person who has been a suicide being taken in an ambulance, put in a morgue on the slab. They all walk out and then this is the opening couple minutes. And then that guy just suddenly wakes up. This guy who's dead, wakes up and he's really cold and he goes into the next room, puts a blanket on himself, goes to sleep. The next day somebody discovers him, oh, this must be a mental patient or something.
Mm-hmm.
They don't realize he's dead and they take him to a different, like a psychiatrist kind of, what would you call that?
It's like a psych ward.
Yeah, psych ward where people are evaluated. And then it starts opening up into the world of doctors and you start to meet your key characters and this kind of, but it's a very real feeling movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then it moves into the supernatural.
Yeah, the character that has returned from the dead, has very little memory about who he is or why he's there. He doesn't know his name or anything like that. The only thing that he knows is he refers to himself as the mouth of death.
Mm.
And then it kind of evolves from there and you find out that he is, And again, I cringe to use the word possessed or demon because you don't really know what it is. You just know that he is aware that there is something taking over his body and that he is now capable of killing people. And it kind of evolves from there.
And he kind of drains them. And it, I don't want to give away too much, because, yeah. but it definitely goes horror. I think it's kind of a movie where somebody could look from the outside and go, oh, it looks like it's never going to go horror, but it definitely goes full on.
It goes really strong.
It's only, I think we both felt the one shortcoming, and I think that will appeal to some people and not to others, is just that it just doesn't give you enough mythos background of what the horror is. So you're left. I mean, it really leaves.
It gets
pretty
super
ambiguous.
Brutal. But yeah, it definitely is missing a lot of the explanation. But yeah. That said, like I loved the ride of it.
It's a good film. I know Matt Wedge is the Grindhouse exploit. What does that say? Daily Grindhouse writer. Mm-hmm. And he was at the thing. He was at our live show. And all I know about this guy, because like, on his profile, it just says like world's biggest Larry Cohen fan. So as soon as he sat down in the crowd, I just pointed from our live show, Larry Cohen fan. And then he, of course, wrote about that in his article. I noticed this was his favorite film of the festival, mm-hmm. when we were doing summaries. And I think that one thing sometimes really appeals to people.
Yeah.
For me, in the moment, it was a little short, but it's still very interesting.
I can't recall their names. The people in front of us that we hung out with all weekend.
Yeah, Ali and,
they seemed to really enjoy it.
No,
so, I mean, the crowd definitely loved it.
It could almost be an A24 type of horror film.
Yeah, it did feel really A24, where it's
slow
like,
burn, realist.
We don't really have to explain much. Just live in the moment. The terror. There,
I like Shane Carruth a lot. He's somebody I've liked as an actor for a long time. Usually he directs himself, so it's hard to tell what he's like as an actor. Right. This is one of the first times he's like just jumped into a lead role, and the poster's awesome. So you're listening to us talk about it. You will get to see this movie at Texas Frightmare if you're there, and I'll do the Q&A there.
Yeah. And, right, how is Arrow Films involved?
I guess they. Yeah, I saw their response. It must be something they're releasing. They must be.
Oh, really?
So are they doing contemporary releases now?
They've done a couple.
Well, they did Climax in UK.
Oh, you're right.
British, right. Ghoul was one that they did. Yeah. I wasn't crazy about that one, but they do some.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, I think they're
a sales rep.
Yeah, we'll have to look it up. But it's worth your time. I think horror fans, and it's one you'll keep thinking about it. Like I definitely, the more I think about it, the more I like it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's an interesting film.
I had the same thing.
Very real. So that's the only movie we got to. There's a list out the wazoo that we wanted
to see. Yeah, I've got a ton of screeners that I've requested. We did play pool with a very edgy guy who may have been possessed by a demon.
He could have been, yes.
But friend
of the show, Mark Pavlinsky, beat him. And
beat
we were
him.
Very happy about
yes.
it. Thank you, Mark.
Go Mark Pavlinsky.
Did he save his soul?
He probably saved him from, saved
all
from
our souls.
Me, because I was probably going to beat his soul. But that was all we got to see there. But there was a lot of good films that we want to catch up with later, like Fingers and Girl in the Third Floor and all. There's so much cool stuff. We'll see eventually.
Monos was one I'd really wanted to see. Yeah, there was just a bunch that I Harpoon.
Yeah.
So I've requested many a screening link.
Yeah.
Nice.
What have you seen, Ryan?
A couple things. I caught up to Black Summer, at least the first episode of Black Summer.
Oh, is this a series, right?
Yeah. So it's the latest Netflix original series that is drumming up a little bit of social media conversation.
Yeah, it's a little yesterday.
Yeah. And what I didn't know before I hit play was that it's a prequel to another zombie show called Z Nation.
I had no idea.
Driving down Sunset Boulevard, there's a giant billboard for Black Summer, but it doesn't say, you know, from a prequel.
But you don't have to have seen anything if it's a prequel.
No. At least that's what I've gotten so far. I mean, like, I went into the pilot cold and it begins as just another kind of zombie movie. The best way I could describe this is like Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, the series. You know, it's now this is only bit, like I said, based on watching the first episode, but I'm curious to see where it goes. The first episode is kind of structured in a non-linear fashion. So what you're doing is you're plopped into this very stressful situation in a suburban neighborhood where you're introduced to a variety of characters. So a black title card will come up and say Mary, and then you're focused on this one woman. In this case, we're introduced to Jamie King, who plays a mom who, with her husband, here, like when we find them, they're in a house, but they're scrambling to pack up, and you get the sense that it's their home, but it's really not their home because all of these, it's kind of post zombie uprising. And in this neighborhood, it's like all these squatters who are just like kind of buckled down for safety. And what they're ultimately waiting for is the government, the army to roll up with trucks to take them out of there. Mm-hmm. So when they wake up, they can hear the sirens and the guys barking orders. Come to the trucks. So it becomes this very hectic situation shot in a one-er, you know, and obviously you see the seams, but it's shot in a one-er as they get to the truck. And when they get to the truck, she puts her daughter up on the truck and she's like, baby, you're good to go. The military look at her husband. He doesn't look so hot. You know, they pull up his shirt. He's got a bite on his stomach, and you can imagine where it goes from there. Then we cut suddenly to another character at the same time, but at a different perspective. The zombies are super fast. They're bleeding from the eyes and mouth. They scream. They're pretty terrifying. What's interesting about the show is amidst all of the kind of connecting with all these characters as they are embarking on a single goal to get to this military checkpoint, you actually see the kind of a rise of a zombie. So there's this girl who gets hit by a truck, and you see her in one story get hit by a truck in the background. You're like, oh man, that's the fucking streets are crazy. Then we actually focus on her character leading up to her getting hit by the truck, and then her coming to light, you know, undead. She becomes a zombie, and then we follow her through the streets, chasing after people, bursting through doors. You know, it was pretty cool. It was an impressive start to a show, but it kind of sits in the shadow of how I've been feeling about the zombie subgenre, which is I'm fucking bored.
Yeah.
I'm really, really tired of it.
Spin-offs,
I mean, like the Walking Dead spinoffs and the films and the VOD titles. There's just nothing really new to say about the genre because we've all seen the same themes regurgitated over and over. It's like humanity sucks. The person that you didn't think was going to turn on you is going to turn on you.
Yep.
You know, you're going to do everything you can to survive. You're going to have to kill somebody that you don't want to kill.
I will say the last act of the most recent Walking Dead had a lot of potential. I started to get, which was this idea of humans starting to wear the skin of zombies to get by and whisper. And
is that
I was
what
like,
they're doing
it
now?
Was really creepy. It was fucking scary. The first episode was the best one I think they've ever filmed in terms of creepiness.
Oh, that's cool.
And then it kind of lost its own thing as well. But you're right. It's very hard.
These are all the same themes that we got in Romero's original trilogy.
That's why I like Fulci, because there's no themes.
Yeah. You just don't know what the fuck's going to happen.
They're going to eat you, man.
Yeah, let's get some unpredictable stuff.
That's the tagline.
Yeah, we're going to eat you.
We're going to
eat you. I mean, that was it, man.
That's something so simple and pure, man.
Yeah. Fulci's like into it.
But funny. I mean, like overall, I mean, I think
that. Are you
going to stick with it? I am going to stick with you because I started watching. I got 10 minutes into the next episode. And I was like, okay, cool. And to me, I don't know what the story is, but to me, it feels like they're all kind of the survivors are ultimately trying to reach this big checkpoint that the military is at. And she's Jamie King is obviously trying to find her daughter, but I mean, we'll see. I mean, like it will lose me if it starts drawing a connection to Z Nation, which is something I'm not familiar with whatsoever. To me, I always just felt like it was like, oh, it's sci-fi's answer to The Walking Dead, and mind you, too. This series and Z Nation are produced by The Asylum.
Wow.
And I got to tell you, their production value kicked up like 100%.
Oh, my gosh.
It could have been Netflix money, though, right?
Possibly, maybe. Yeah. But it's very slick. It looks good. Her friend Ashley Walsh, who you know Rob too, she did all the makeup on it, and she did a great job. But you know, again, the zombie genre just needs a big kick in the ass, and I'm not sure who's got the chops to do that.
I don't think it needs a kick in the ass. I think it just needs a break. Like if you could, you have 5 years away.
Yeah, keep in mind. This comes after like a moratorium on all zombie things.
Yeah. You know? I mean, if Jarmusch can't make it fun, then we'll know it's the end. If that film tanks and isn't fun, then
I love Jarmusch and I loved Only Lovers Left Alive, but I watched that trailer and it's amusing. But again, I'm like, oh, Jim Jarmusch finally discovered the zombie genre.
But also, it's very close to Zombieland, so
it looks a lot.
Really? But I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful because I love Jarmusch. Yeah. But if it isn't fun, you'll know that really was the end for a while.
I just think
everything needs a rest at some point, so you have time to reinvent and time to crave it again. Like right now. After I think it was Travis Stevens tweeted this morning, he was just like, you know, top five vampire films. I got excited about vampire films.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I want some really good original new vampire films.
Yeah.
And it's just everything's cyclical.
Did you respond to that tweet?
Yeah, of course. What do you think? Which Fright Night do you think I picked?
You are. fucking
somebody,
I got Martin and Habit on mine.
That's really funny. I think it was at the trivia we did in Chattanooga. Yeah. Someone was wearing It was like the Fright Night logo, but it looked like a Batman logo, and yep. it had Chris Sarandon's head at the top.
No. It was beautiful. It was
amazing. What?
And of course, Ulrich's like, that should be amazing if you just put a little two right there in the corner. But then it wouldn't be Chris Sarandon's head. He's like, doesn't matter. Just needs a two.
No, it's a great shirt.
The Lord put me here to antagonize Ryan. I'm pretty sure that was the whole point.
You and Brian Collins. Anyways.
Yeah, it is a fun yeah. But no, it is fun to think of like when something hasn't been explored. Like right now, I'd be very interested in a new interpretation.
Do you want to know his picks? Because I pulled up his Twitter.
Okay.
Oh.
What I say.
Your five vampire picks were Martin, Habit, Fright Night 2, Daughters of Darkness, and The Addiction.
See, that's a good pick. Okay.
That's a solid.
I agree with three of your
very
five.
Artsy.
I would put
it was hard not to put the hammer
there.
One. I wanted to put, what's the hammer one? The Brides of Dracula. I came very close to that one because that's just fun. Yeah. That's a good,
I put Fright Night, Lost Boys, Near Dark, Bram Stoker's Dracula, and From Dusk Till Dawn.
Bram Stoker's Dracula really should be in any of
those. Oh, I think Near Dark is a definite. Yeah.
But it's a kick-ass genre. Well, one day we'll go all in on vampires.
Yeah, we should.
But also, I was just thinking, like, Dracula itself, I think, would be really fun to like, a modern version, though.
Plus,
like, what would he look
none
like?
None of you guys put Martin on your list, which
it was
I
my number one.
Oh, wait, that was. Oh, Martin, I'm sorry. I missed it. Martin. Okay, because that is my number one.
No, definitely.
Because that's what I consider, like, a contemporary version.
Yeah, for that time, yeah. It was contemporary at the time, yeah.
And, I mean, speaking of which, one of the things that I've been watching is I am still just – I watched the third episode of What We Do in the Shadows last night.
So good.
So awesome.
I keep forgetting. I've got
now that they've got the emotional vampire, I'm just like, oh my God.
Oh, nice.
My cat has leukemia.
My cat died.
Oh, I got to do that.
It's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. When she's like facing off, she's like, my friend got cancer. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ.
What about you, Rob?
What'd you see?
I actually don't really have much beyond the festival because we went straight.
No, well,
we went straight to work.
Yeah, I mean, the only what did you want to?
Well, we watched some of a Blumhouse title. Oh. Did you watch any?
No, I was asleep.
Oh,
he
watched the first few minutes of Tag, though.
Tag. I made them because we were all just sitting around in our jammies.
Yeah.
No, the Sion Sano film.
Oh, that movie is crazy.
I know, right?
We only watched the first 5 minutes because she told us.
And we were just like tooling around on Netflix, and everybody was like, well, let's watch this and let's watch this. And I'm like, we're watching the first 10 minutes of Tag, and then y'all can do whatever you want to watch or watch whatever you want to watch, but I'm picking the first 10 minutes of Tag, and I made them watch it.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant.
We only had like 3 hours in this Airbnb. I was like, I'm not watching shit. I'm going to bed.
Elric and I stayed
hours.
Up and watched a movie. We watched Seven in Heaven.
7 minutes in Heaven or Seven in Heaven?
Seven in Heaven.
Yeah, and it had Gary Cole in it, which we loved.
Gary Cole.
There's certain plot things we still don't fully get. But there was something about a trading card that we got really excited. There's these like nudie kind of just, you know, the
playing cards.
Playing cards that is like a passport to travel through dimensions.
I was just excited that he discovered his mom on a nudie card. That's like a crazy plot right there.
But I will say that his mom looked like she could also date him because they looked kind of a similar age range, which was very exciting to all of us.
Wow.
I would say that
something we considered.
There was a bit of that in the casting.
It's just got all types of like Back to the Future.
Somebody else
don't date your mom.
I think Mallory came and sat down. She's like, well, but those kids really look 14, but those ones look 20. I'm uncomfortable with them being in the same scene as they play this game. So there's a few things like that where we have questions, but I feel like this isn't the right place. We will do it offline. We'll just disseminate plot points.
It is on Netflix now.
Well, the premise hooked us and
DVD.
We kept watching.
And DVD.
It. I think that's what we'll say about it. Like the premise kept us watching because we kept going, like, oh, where will they take that premise?
Yeah, where's it going to go?
So that hooked us. But some of the directions was like baffling. But, you know, hey.
You know who shot it?
No. Oh, yes.
Kareem Hussein.
I did comment on that as we were watching.
Oh, wait. Who is it?
Kareem.
Oh, wow.
And directed by a great actor from the you know, 90s, especially Chris Eigenman.
Chris Eigenman.
Who, didn't you say he was a big horror fan when you met him finally?
Or he is a fan. And he listens to Shockwaves.
Okay. So, yeah. If you listen, Chris.
So the movie Last Days of Disco is on Netflix now. So definitely check it out.
But yeah, we want some plot breakdown later. But we'll do that offline.
Cool. I'll do my best.
Yeah, Ryan
or I'll just put you in touch with Chris.
Ryan Sway.
Chris, like, no.
Well, then I got home. And I mean, after our whole ordeal of going to Nashville, we did have amazing barbecue. And we did walk the strip and ogle everything and look at the Kid Rock Club and all that fun stuff. But by the time I finally got home, I was just completely like road ragged. And it was so much so that I couldn't sleep because I was still like, my time was completely off. And so I ended up binging the Night Flight app, which I've talked about Night Flight before on the show. And none of y'all fuckers have never.
What are you talking about, Becca?
Oh my God.
I went on a whole thing about it. like 2 weeks ago.
Okay, making sure, because there was definitely a time a long time ago.
When she says fucker, she means me and Rob. Yeah.
No, there was definitely a time like a year ago where I had mentioned that Night Flight was a huge influence on my childhood, and I was so excited because they had like an app on my Roku now, and they had everything I love, including all the Arrow titles, and you guys were like, what's a Night Flight? And I about died inside. Because Night Flight, when I was in like middle to high school, it was my perfect mix of exploitation, horror, and heavy metal music videos all in one beautiful place.
Yeah. Like it was a channel, or was it just like once a week kind of
thing? So it was very much like USA Up All Night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
right. Where it was like a 4-hour stretch. It would go from like 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. And a lot of it was just shorts. Like they would show shorts and cartoons and weird shit. And then here's an interview with Motley Crue, and here's footage of Ozzy at a concert, and here's some punk rock band you've never heard of, and here's a kung fu film.
Cool.
And it would span for 4 hours straight.
Yeah. Some of the my new kind of weekend ritual is on Saturday morning, I'll just throw it on and just put on the Night Flight Live. Mm-hmm. Or like the way – basically, I forget what they call it, Night Flight as it was aired, and it would come with commercials.
Yep.
And the when I hit play on the very first episode, did you know what I got? I got a Ghostbusters 1-900 commercial.
Yeah.
And it was from like 85, 86 or whenever. I mean, like this was like in the wake of the film's success. But it was like a commercial that was inviting you to buy Ghostbusters merch and call in and hear Slimer and all this shit. I mean, like that Night Flight has a lot of treasures and a lot of horror stuff. There's an all horror episode of music tied to horror with a lot of like vintage interviews with people and stuff like that. It's amazing.
One of the episodes, because I'll do the Netflix where it plays it as it airs. And I watched it because it had some of the punk bands out of DC, including Steve Niles.
Oh, I was going to say, was Steve in there?
He was. Wow. He was. And so he was on there, but then it was intercut with an interview with Robert Englund as Robert Englund, but wearing his full Freddy regalia.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And so it was really fascinating because he's just sitting there like sipping a cup of tea, but he's in full makeup. But yeah, so I got home and I couldn't sleep, so I ended up watching Girls from Thunder Strip and For Your Height Only, which is a Filipino action film with Wang Wang. That's why I posted Wang Wang.
One of his films we showed at Jumco was the Rat Man?
I have not seen that one.
Man, it was wild. That was a wild screen.
Well, this one came out of a purse.
At one point, he's in a woman's purse.
What?
And the purse opens, he jumps out and kills her. I was like, holy shit, he was in a purse.
No, this one was completely wild. Like, it was just nuts. So both of those films just definitely kind of hit my exploitation sweet spot for the night. So yeah, I highly recommend checking out the Night Flight app. I think it's maybe $2.99 a month. And I've talked to the guy who created the channel a while ago. We should try to get him on.
We should. Yeah. I would love to pick his brain. Another discovery I made on Night Flight is when they were doing one of their horror specials, they took you on the set of Nightmare on Elm Street 2, but it was all production audio, not mixed. Mm-hmm. So when you had Freddy chasing Jesse, it was Robert Englund's voice. It wasn't mixed in the Freddy through the Freddy filter. So it was Robert Englund going, "Come here, Jesse," you know, and it was like Robert Englund's natural voice. It was amazing just to see like the little bit behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, no, Night Flight is definitely a huge chunk of my childhood.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to be able to play around on the app now and see all the amazing stuff. And again, they do have a huge amount of the Arrow titles and most of the Something Weird titles on there as well.
Too.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one more if you don't.
I got two more.
Oh, yeah, hit it. You hit it first.
All right. So one of the purchases at Monsterpalooza that I got the Hyena Gallery table was the Tales from the Crypt radio drama.
Oh, yeah.
It's a multi-CD box set that I actually got in studio here. And what I didn't know that the show spawned a radio show for sci-fi.com. It was like sci-fi.com had something called Seeing Ear Theater back in 2000. They're fully dramatized episodes, 7 in all. I've listened to 2 so far, and they're pretty amazing. To give you some perspective on they're not podcasts like No Sleep or What You're Getting Today. These are like really impressively produced shows with like sound effects and music. And
like Tales from the Pale, right?
Tales from the Pale. Vocal work from actors like Gina Gershon and Luke Perry and Tim Curry and Oliver Platt. And the thing that I love about it is each episode opens with the Danny Elfman theme song, but it's John Kassir as a Crypt Keeper singing over it. So there are now lyrics to the theme song. And they're just as punny as you can imagine. The first episode I listened to was about a guy who finds himself on an island where he's hunted by a woman in a televised event. It was very timely, very cool. Yeah. Luke Perry is the main guy, and he's kind of this horror movie nerd guy who's always dropping, like, he's like talking to his friends and he's like, top five vampire movies, go. And then like they'll try to figure like out the best thing and they'll argue about it. The second episode is all about the offspring of a werewolf and a vampire who is a politician. I think all of the episodes are on YouTube. So if you want to hear that opening theme song, I highly advise you go check it out. And if you can find this thing on eBay, I'm sure it's pretty cheap. I bought this thing for $15.
Wow.
I've been listening to it in the car, but it's pretty great.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool.
So I missed this when it was at Beyond Fest, or it was part of the Egyptian, and I think Ryan had mentioned it. You maybe mentioned getting the director on our show. Mm-hmm. I wish we had now, because I love this movie. I watched it last night, The Wind, directed by Emma Tammy. I'm a big – we've been recently doing some Western things for the Pure Cinema, and I discovered a slasher Western that wasn't very good at all called A Knife for the Ladies that is on Amazon. It's not very good, but it's a straight slasher that just happens to be set in the Old West. And so I really love it when horror and the Old West kind of interlock.
That's called A Knife for the Ladies?
A Knife for the Ladies. Yeah, it's the opening scene is just pure giallo, but it happens to be in the Old West. Mm. And then it just gets a little clunky. But this film – like, first, hats on, Emma Tammy is the director, but the one thing that really grabbed me, Lynn Moncrief is the cinematographer, and it's a gorgeous-looking movie. I wish I'd seen it at the Egyptian. Yep. But what's really cool about it is it's very much about isolation in the West, so it's really just a couple who are living in an isolated house in the middle of nowhere in the West, and then another couple moves nearby. The film is told structurally all out of order, and so you actually start at a high point where somebody has just died, one of the couples has just died in the opening scene, and a baby has died. And so it's a very bloody opening, very disturbing. And then it slowly pulls you into like a nice couple trying to make their way in the West, and then another couple. Oh, great. We're not so isolated anymore. So the setup's really interesting. But then, you know, then jealousy and the anxiety of being isolated in the Old West start to kind of creep in. And then the main woman is left alone for a couple of days after this tragedy's happened. The two men, the men folk, go off to get to a city to try to get help. And she starts seeing, every time the winds come through, she starts seeing basically some darkness behind the wooden door that looks like a demon. And then there's some real full on kind of demon interaction. So it's basically a woman with a shotgun versus this wind like demon that's kind of preying on your own jealousies and fears, set in the Old West, and it's shot. You know, it feels very small in the sense. The scale is beautiful, and it feels you have the typical Western expanse that you want from a Western.
Right.
But it's shot so minimally, and it's always focused on just really one person most of the film, and then occasionally these other characters. And there's this really cool, like when they first come to town, which you only get towards the end of the film, is, you know, you come across a preacher who hands her a Bible, but it also comes with this thing about the demon that goes in the wind, and you should be careful of the demons. And I don't know. I thought the production value is gorgeous. This, it doesn't. I think sometimes you think, oh, it's going to be some little digital, you know, knockout. Feels like a really quite a big film on one level, but it's just perfectly small and intimate in what it's pulling off. I really like this. This would definitely be one I would recommend.
Well,
to people.
We can get Emma on anytime.
Yeah, and people should check it out. It just hit VOD, so it's cost like, you know, $6 or whatever. And especially if you like that intersection of your movies, there aren't a lot of great horror westerns. You know, there's a handful that are interesting, but there aren't a lot of great ones. And this one is pretty faithful. I really dug it.
That's cool. The final one I've got is Scream Factory released The Brain, 1988.
Oh, man. I just got this one, too.
Oh, I love it. I've never seen it either. I just remember the VHS box cover.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like this kind of blobby-looking dude with big eyes, and supposedly he's the brain.
I only saw it a few years ago, but I think if I'd seen the first 5 minutes as a kid, it would have been the number one Kinder trauma of all scene, because it's like the little teddy bear thing with the little girl.
Yeah.
It's fucking so bonkers.
Yeah, so basically what you've got, the setup is David Gale from Reanimator. He is kind of like this pop psychologist who runs an institute, and he's got a big talk show, and he's got aspirations to reach a wider audience, but he's aligned himself with this alien entity that is a giant fucking brain that can send out hallucinations and make people do things in this little community. Some video drum shit. And so what you have is you open on this little girl who was once a presumably a patient of Gail's. And when she comes home, yeah, she starts seeing shit in her bedroom. The teddy bear's cheeks start to bleed. Tentacles burst out of the closet and they grab her. And
it's like the opening of Tag. You wanting to show that? I always want to show the opening of The Ring.
And what happens?
This is the little creature on the box cover, right? Yeah. It's just like a little face. Okay.
So what ultimately happens is the little girl grabs a knife to defend herself, and she starts stabbing at the tentacle. But it's mom.
Oh.
We never really quite go back to that story because then we're introduced with the man with the straightest eyebrows in the world, who's our protagonist, a high school student with a little bit of trouble, and his parents and the principal meet up, and they're like, "You probably should go in for therapy." And they're like, "Let's go to this institute. You'll get all the the help you need." He goes there. He gets all hooked up to these like little what do you call them when they stick little wires
into your
electrodes and stuff. Yeah. And David Gale's like, "I want you to look at this TV, and I want you to tell me what you see." So this kid's staring at the TV, and there's this beautiful blonde woman standing there in a nurse outfit, and she's holding up a baseball. But suddenly the baseball morphs into an apple, and he's like, "It's a baseball." "Oh, wait, it's an apple." And then he's like, "Oh, wait, it's a baseball again. Wait a minute, now she's not wearing any clothes." And you cut to the TV and the nurse is like completely naked. And he's like, David Gale's like, "Really? Are you sure? There's something, your son looks like you're hallucinating." And the kid's like, "You're just fucking with me. I'm out of here." And he leaves. And then what you discover is when he hooked the kid up to the electrodes are tied to this giant fucking brain that lives at the heart of the institute. And the brain is basically connecting to the people in the community and influencing them to do shit like commit suicide and murder. So
why?
To gain power, Becca, and to gain control. And basically,
how?
And David, because it's a fucking brain, like a psychic brain.
Becca, did you ask why at Terrorvision?
Yeah,
did you ask why at
Seriously.
So David, a long list of why.
Okay, fine.
So David Gale wants the ultimate power, and he's going to do it with this giant alien brain, of course. So, what you've got is a story about a bunch of high schoolers who are trying to, crush the man and crush this giant brain. But what's great is that this brain evolves in the beginning from like, it's a legit, just a giant fucking brain, like Fiend Without a Face, and a giant vertebrae. And then it feeds on one of the nurses, and David Gale is just standing there staring at it like, "Well, that's interesting."
Yeah.
And then the brain completes his feeding. And then it splits in half and becomes the creature that's on the box cover.
Why?
Don't know.
Because he's on the box. That's why.
He's on the box. That's why.
It's evolution. The creature has evolved.
What you get is a lot of goopy tentacle stuff. You get a lot of brain eating people whole. Like it'll actually just like shove you in its mouth.
Well, you have made a sale, right? I am ordering this movie
while we are on air.
It's also
on Amazon Prime, right?
I don't know.
I'm looking
right now. That's how I saw it years ago.
The Brain.
But it's also a hidden Christmas movie.
Oh, I definitely
because it takes place in and around Christmas. Basically like the Brain and David Gale want to brainwash the world and this kid's out to stop it. And it's a lot of fun, but it's just filled with these endless chase sequences.
Yeah.
Like the kid goes on the run and you're like, chase, 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 chase. And then like the film just stops cold. The kid does something and then he gets captured and then he breaks out and it's a further chase scene until shit happens. It does have – there's a great moment in the film where the kid is basically David Gale – has invited a big chunk of the community to come to the latest taping of his show. So you've got all these people who are like mostly brainwashed audience members walking into the institute. And our main character is walking, trying to blend in, but he stops cold because in the middle of the sidewalk, like this conveniently placed newspaper stand in the middle of the sidewalk that is clearly blocking the sidewalk is there to deliver a plot point, which is on the front page of the newspaper. It says, "Our hero is wanted for murder." So the kid, and it says so right on the front page. The kid takes out a quarter, pops it in, pulls out the newspaper, looks at the headline again, and then discards it. I'm like, "What the fuck, kid? That was a good quarter there."
Funny.
Anyways, it's filled with these like little weird eccentricities, and it's a lot of fun. I had a blast with it. I love the effects.
Maybe a good Joe Bob Briggs one.
Oh, it's a great Joe Bob.
It would actually be perfect
if
he did that one, yeah.
That would be amazing. The Shout Factory, Scream Factory Blu-ray has a few interviews, including an interview with the Ultimate Fan. And you know what, man? Ultimate fan, I'm with you, dude. I think it's amazing. This kid went out of – you know, this kid exuded the enthusiasm for the brain so much. He had reached out to the director who sent him cool shit. He reached out to he struck a rapport with the director where it was like a pen pal relationship. Wow. Where the director was sending him storyboards and concept art.
Wow.
And he held on to all that stuff. He reached out to the actors who were in the film, and they were just sending him cool shit from the brain, you know? So it was like, it's a nice little slice of fandom on there.
That's the kind of special feature I love to see.
Yeah.
Something that's
that was the first one I watched because I was like, this seems the most interesting to me. But yeah, it's fun. The brain.
Yeah. Yeah, that by the way, I don't think it's on Prime anymore, but this Scream Factory one comes out April 30th officially.
Oh, cool. Thank
it's
you.
A street date.
I'll buy that. Yeah.
Good stuff. That's all I got.
Funnily enough, I'd probably pair it with The Suckling, which is a little hint of what's to come.
I would actually pair it with Terrorvision, to be honest.
Yeah.
No, that was the one that I had a hankering for after watching.
The only thing I'd say about that pairing is it wouldn't be the perfect segue that I just set up.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
All right.
Segues.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna have the fine folks from Vinegar Syndrome after you hear from our sponsors again. Becca may disappear.
I have to disappear, guys, but have fun.
Bye,
I love
Becca.
Vinegar Syndrome. Woo!
This week's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by the following advertisers.
Full Moon. Get ready to delve deep into the weird world of essential cult entertainment only on Full Moon's Amazon channel. Classic Full Moon and Empire Picture faves like Castle Freak, Puppet Master, Subspecies, Necropolis, Intruder, Head of the Family, Evil Bong, The Ginger Dead Man, Laser Blast, The Pit and the Pendulum, and Lurking Fear share space with a wild library of cult creepers from the legendary Blue Underground and Something Weird video labels. The Andy Sidaris and Jeff Franco collections, the Eurocin archives, Trailers from Hell, and much, much more. It's an unlimited onslaught of awesome right at your fingertips 24/7. New uncut movies are added every week, and all titles are available in the highest definition available. So get yourself over to Amazon and subscribe to Full Moon today for only $6.99 per month. Your glaze balls will never be the same again. Trust us.
Shockwaves is headed to Texas Frightmare Weekend in Dallas, Texas. This is the 14th year for the convention, and it's presented by Arrow Video. Shockwaves will be putting on a live show Saturday, May 4th at 11 a.m. in the Maverick Room. Come join us with a cup of coffee and enjoy some breakfast and chill out. We'll also be there all weekend at booths number 31 and 32. Come visit us. Come be on the show. We're going to be recording on the floor. This year's guests at Texas Frightmare include Bruce Campbell, Tim Curry, Robert Englund, Lee Majors, Meatloaf, Joe Bob Briggs, and many more. Texas Frightmare Weekend takes place May 3rd through the 5th at the Hyatt Regency DFW Airport Hotel. Come join us and say hi.
Great. Okay, so we are back for the interview portion of the show, and we're very excited. A couple of months ago, back in October, we had these guys on, and it went over really, really well. We heard a lot of great feedback from our listeners, and apparently at the conventions, our listeners have given feedback back. So welcome back to the show, Jeff Cattell and Joe Rubin from Vinegar Syndrome.
Yeah, we're back. Like syphilis and the Steven Spielberg dinosaur animated movie.
Yes.
Nice.
That was the most appropriate Vinegar Syndrome intro I've ever heard. It's wonderful.
I have no idea what the dinosaur
is. That Land Before Time?
It's called We're Back.
They advertised the shit out of that on the heels of Jurassic Park.
Yes.
It was a white poster with a T-Rex with a full bag of fun.
Dancing down the street in New York.
Down the street. Yeah.
Wow.
Welcome. He's wearing a Severin shirt, though, right?
I am. Anthropophagus. It is basically Antonioni's La Aventura with a cannibal.
It totally is, yeah.
And that's why it's great.
There's no one in Greece. They're just like no one on the streets. They just walk around.
Yep.
NUI ensues and then crazy.
Severin actually sent me a plush doll of the character that's on your shirt. Remember you saw it and you're like, what the hell is this?
I can't believe that exists.
And I'm like, yes, it's a doll of that guy. For the kids.
For the kids.
That's enough competition. We're giving a lot to your competition here.
They are our cousins. Yeah, we take that.
Yes, yes, cousins. And
we're always trying to put people against movie crypt and all shit. Jesus.
What's really important is the shirt I'm wearing, trying to promote.
Oh, what are you wearing?
So my ploy is to get you guys in a room and then try to push new movies into your vision. Not that this is new, but today it's Night Beast. Trying to get you guys. Have people tried to do Night Beast in the past?
That shirt looks really comfortable.
It is an uncomfortable shirt.
You are not alone. A gentleman walked up to the table with that exact same shirt at Monster Palooza and basically just stuck it out at me and said, "Put this out." Mm. And there was a little bit of sweat, you know, but I got him to buy some discs and he brought it up again before he left. So,
which is basically going to be Elric this entire episode.
Well, I think obviously Mandy's brought it back into the conversation, so that's good. New people are discovering that.
Where did you get your shirt?
I just typed in the words after I saw it, and I was like, I'll buy anything that has anything of Night Beast on it or near it. And this was the only shirt, and it's on the most uncomfortable cotton I've ever felt. And it's a ridiculously big picture. Like, no one wants a picture this size on their chest, especially this creature. But it's
but your love of Night Beast outweighs comfort.
I loved it so much. I can't even it's like one of those, and I came late to this Don Dollar thing, but it was like instant love. I just loved everything about that backyard epic.
Wow.
It's gorgeous. I saw his first one, I was like, yeah, it's pretty good, but yeah. I think it's the first contact you have with that kind of work.
I like that people have to take requests by t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, have to go into my drawer and find something really rare and obscure and go up to that person and go, make
this.
Put this out.
So I'm going to wear a Black Room t-shirt next. Be like, I want Black Room out. I think I tried that with Severin. I was trying to push them. Somebody's got to put that. That's one of those movies
It's one of my favorite slashers.
Is it a rights issue with that film?
It's complicated. It's much more complicated than just rights.
I think that film's incredible. And I remember hearing a podcast just totally write it off. They're just like, it's another bad, sleazy 80s film. I'm like, no, it's like gorgeous and strange and amazing tracking shots.
Inspired by Norman Thaddeus Vane's real experiences, apparently.
Oh really? Oh, wow. Having like a sex room? No.
No, more so the voyeurism aspect.
Okay. Yeah. Watch
that he was being spied upon.
Yeah.
Or something to that effect.
Yeah. So this is a movie in Nightmare USA, the book. If you're interested in checking out, it's a great movie, but only on VHS.
Cool.
So there's still great things to find.
Yeah. Well, a lot has happened since you guys were on last. Go back to that episode. It's actually episode 121, only because we kind of go into the history of Vinegar Syndrome and how you guys came to be and all that. And we don't need to repeat that here. But a lot of, I mean, literally, I am overwhelmed by the amount of releases since then.
Yes.
And there's a few that I want to highlight in a minute, but let's delve into what are some of the favorites or the standouts of the last couple of months since you've been on that you'd like to mention on the show.
Well, and there are some that are immediately people know and have been buying. Obviously, last time we were on the show, we gave a couple of hints, and Mausoleum dropped, at the Black Friday sale, and even at Monster Palooza, even without the slip, we sold out of it.
Yeah.
So that's one. I don't have to talk about it. And by the way, we killed it at Monster Palooza. We killed it at, on Black Friday. It's basically like we're killing this whole thing like it lives on CeeLo Drive. That's how good the things have been for us lately.
Wow. That's a rather crass comparison.
How was the children received?
Oh, very well.
Oh, yeah, because that was the other one.
Right? I loved it. I hadn't seen it before, and I thought it was a great movie. Like, I mean, it's one of those movies where every shot holds way too long. It's like clearly, and it's just so interesting. It was like so purposeful, but the actual scenes with the arms out are really great little horror scenes, I thought.
No, and it's done very well. Certainly not as well as Mausoleum, because that title, just for whatever reason, people just love to pick that up, but still very well. But yeah, one of the titles I'd love to talk about first, and people were picking it up at Monster Palooza, and I think they weren't as familiar with it, is The Killing Kind with John Savage, which is this great little L.A., kind of serial killer movie that's like a little bit like Henry. It's a little bit like Maniac. Mm. And it has some great like kind of 70s L.A., kind of location stuff in it. And has this great kind of little story. And Savage is amazing in it. Like basically his career took off to get to Deer Hunter because of this movie. Mm. Oh, and wow. I think it's phenomenal. And I was able to sell people on it just basically because they hadn't heard of it. And they'd pick it up and kind of look at it a little bit. And you're able to push it by just being like, look, if you love our other kind of like psycho movies like Don't Answer the Phone, and, The Undertaker and those kind of things, go back to something like Killing Kind because it's a great movie that has like this really, amazing kind of visuals to it. And especially if you love, L.A. sleaze at that time period.
I don't really know that I'd call it all that sleazy, though. It's Curtis Harrington, and his movies are much more interested in ambiance than content.
He's a big fan of Poe and things like that. And Night Tide's a great movie.
But it's a consistently nasty and downbeat film, and it has a very effective ending that really is there's a Polish film that I can't remember the name of from 1978 that has a similar ending. But those are the only two films that I can think of that actually have exactly what occurs, and it comes as a surprise considering a lot of the character interaction logic that thrillers tend to use.
And it's one of those movies that I think once you've seen it once, you'll want to go back and watch it again. Like, it's one of those movies that I think people want to return to because it fits in that mold, and I think they just kind of missed it, you know, and didn't really see it. And it's
well, there's a rat on the cover. Sometimes that could be a turnoff to someone.
Yeah, it's a rat movie. It's not one of our covers where it's just like a Splatter University cover, where it's like that. It immediately draws you to it, you know. But it does have a subtlety to it that is very effective. And another one is Dear Dead Delilah, which is kind of this Southern Gothic, kind of thriller where it's like. You know, there's the old, the old matriarch, and then like somebody's trying to get the money, and then like somebody's killing people, you know, and it's like, is it connected to the money? Who's dying and where? And it has this, it's a really great vibe with that kind of sticky, hot Southern kind of feel to it, but has a great cast and a great a great visualization. And it's directed by someone, right?
It's directed by the guy who wrote The Fury. And it was produced by a country music star. And years ago when he was still alive, he's since died, I cold called him and he was amused that I wanted to put out the film. And he's like, talk to my son. So I talked to his son. He's like, have you actually seen this movie? Like, you still want to put it out? Okay.
So. Wow, this John Ferris, right?
Yes.
The author of The Fury. That's crazy.
And a couple other novels, and he just kind of – I think that was the only movie he made, or he made one
more?
The
only film he directed.
Yeah. But he has a style to it. Like, it's – a lot of authors, when they go into actually directing, they don't really they don't necessarily carry over that well, especially with working with actors. But there's a certain weight to it. And if you like things like Scalpel –
yeah,
and
that was actually one of my favorites of last year. That was a nice surprise. Southern Gothic film,
And that this fits very well in that as kind of a good like kind of two hander.
Okay,
but it has way more gore.
Okay, cool.
And then certainly a movie with multiple titles. Dead Dudes in the House is the one I always remember. House on
Tombstone
Hill and The Dead Come Home.
Yeah, but the original shooting title was The Road.
And that's another one of those that, like, it's kind of like a bunch of guys moving into the house and there's something killing them kind of one by one. So it's a little bit of a – I wouldn't call it a slasher.
I'd call it a slasher.
It's
a supernatural slasher.
Yeah. Okay. There we go.
There's no real logic to the plot, but it's this man in old woman makeup going and – her daughter or granddaughter or something, who are sort of stuck in time from the 40s, killing off a bunch of yuppies who have bought a house in the middle of nowhere to remodel it.
And it was an old Trauma title, right? That's where the Dead Dudes in the House title came from.
And they decided that they could market it as a house party cash-in.
It makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So well, what year is that, like late 80s or early?
Shot in 88, not really given a release until like 90 or 91.
And I think that there is a poster that looks very much in the vibe of House Party.
Yeah, with a bunch of people on it who aren't in the film.
Yeah.
That's on the inside. This is the one piece of packaging that confused me because – there's a title everywhere you look.
Yes. Like, both sides like on the side.
What do I call it?
Both sides have a different title on it. You pull it out. That's the third title. Yeah, it's pretty fun. That's cool.
Yeah, that's one of those titles. And it just kind of like – I think people pick it up. They look at it, and they're not truly familiar because there are so many titles to it. And it is kind of a little bit confusing. But it is a good little movie for what – for that kind of thing. And I think for our fan base who want that Friday night kind of movie, you could do – there's – certainly it fits well into that aesthetic.
Also has lots of gore.
Yes. Cool. Oh, man. Well, then let me ask you about a few, because quite a few have come out since last we got together.
Sure.
Well, a favorite of Elric's. Let's jump there then.
Oh, The Suckling?
Yes.
Yeah, I've got the copy that you guys put out. I guess it came out maybe a year before at Amazon at some point, right? Like where it was just there.
It was on Amazon Prime.
That's how I sorted it.
Which is how you discovered it initially.
And it is a, you know, it's like, as far as like back alley abortion movies, it's like really one of the top I've seen. And my suggestion was to pair it because the day I got it, I had just shown to a class that day, 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days. And then I thought, oh, it'd be such a great double feature because that's this great Romanian abortion movie that is very tense and serious. And then you go home and watch The Suckling to just turn your life upside down. I just think it's glorious.
I will say this. At Monsterpalooza, we had a lot of girls drag their boyfriend up and pick that up and be like, you have to buy this for me.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
It's interesting.
But we sold out of it because of that. And they were just like, oh my God, The Suckling, like, I have to see this. I remember reading in a Fangoria article about it in like 1996 or something.
Yeah.
It was like, and it was all there ever was. It was one little article about it, and then I never heard from it again. And then suddenly there it was on the schedule.
It came in a package deal.
Oh, okay. Isn't one of your guys Brad Henderson on the East Coast? I know he's a big fan of this one, right?
He had nothing to do with, with that.
That one. Okay. I know he's a fan of that.
No, that actually, it came along with Slater University.
Oh, wow.
And something else which hasn't been announced yet, so I'm not going to announce it yet, but.
I take Suckling over Splatter University. I mean, Splatter University.
Although Ryan might take Splatter over Suckling.
Yeah. Suckling's just
I haven't seen The Suckling yet. So.
You're going to enjoy it.
By the time I got to the Monsterpalooza table, it was gone. So yes. I was just like,
wow.
Yes.
Now, I'm not as big a fan of The Suckling as Elric is, but I'll tell you what I'm a huge fan of is discovering on this disc that Michael Gingold is The Suckling.
Oh.
And there's an interview with good old Michael Gingold from Fangoria. Telling about how he ended up playing this creature. So I love that.
Yeah. No, I just love that people write, like, that was the title that people ran up and got. It was that, and obviously The Uninvited was the one that people.
Oh, we got to talk about that one because that movie is something else.
I haven't seen this one yet.
You haven't? I thought somebody else had brought this up.
It's not,
How do you feel about a cat demon inside of a cat on a ship?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm all in.
There's so many good cat
ordering now.
Okay.
Don't forget Clue Gulager, who's in it, who's kind of like a thug.
Yeah.
Is that an accurate description?
Well, yeah, he's like he's muscle.
Muscle. Clue Gulager is muscle. Convincingly so. And George Kennedy is in it as well.
Do you have a copy of this that we can watch?
I do. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's watch it immediately.
Yeah.
One of our best, I would say one of the best.
That's an amazing cover.
Yes, that cover with the ship and the cat.
The cat head.
That sold, like, we turned all the discs over to face that cover because people suddenly were just grabbing it.
We need a cat all-nighter, like horror cat all-nighter. There are so many great cat-related, just even, you know, Night of a Thousand Cats and Hasu, we would throw them all together. This is beautiful.
Severin's putting out of The Uncanny.
So. Oh, yeah, oh, wow. That's right. Actually, I think I did just see that, yeah. Very cool.
Let's see a few other ones that I kind of want to throw out there.
Well, while you're looking, I'll mention a couple because two of the ones that you recommended last time. So obviously I've doing my best on Miss Wyckoff because I genuinely agreed with you. It was because when you pitched it almost like this is some Oscar-y nominated film that could be in that echelon. And it really is, especially for her performance, like and kind of how far it goes is uncanny. But the other film I did check out and told a story on air about how we watched it was Runaway Nightmare after hearing you guys where – we watched like 20 minutes and then stopped it because the person I was watching with was just not keen. And I was like, I don't really know what this is. And then we came back to it after Splatter University. And for me, it became this like incredible movie. For him, it was unchanged. But by the end of it, I was like, oh, this is purposeful. This is like mistimed David Lynch, but somehow really interesting. I don't know. I feel like that movie is going to keep growing every year in my brain.
Do you recommend that's how people should watch it?
I guess
only 15 minutes, then Splatter University.
You're meant to watch 20 minutes and then any other Vinegar Syndrome title. It could be any. And then you return to it and you go all in and then you will have a new appreciation.
So at what point did you stop it initially?
It was like I think it was up to him being abducted and taken back to the girl's house. So
that's like 10 minutes.
Yeah, no. We were definitely in the house for a little while, but there was just this feeling of like, I don't know if we should keep watching this. What didn't come from me. I won't out him, but I probably already have, right? But it was something like, you know, we could have not come back to it that night. Like with any movie, you could never watch the rest of that movie. And I was so glad we did because – It really is like one of a kind, just because there's so many different tones in there.
The point that really made me love it is when the spaced out girl says, "Oh wow, man, her head's all gone."
Oh, yeah. All the girls in it are amazing. All the hippies and the cult. But it's also also the on-running gag about the platinum. You're watching a movie where they're talking about like trading in platinum, and you're literally going, "I think the filmmaker made a mistake." like you really think the person got it wrong, but then it's a gag at the end of the movie. So they win us over.
And the Runaway Nightmare. This is only available on DVD at this point, or is the Blu-ray
we did
sold
a limited edition Blu-ray, 1,000 units, and eventually it sold out.
Yeah,
it's still available on DVD.
Can you guys go back and relicense if it's ever worth it? Or
no, we still have rights
for Blu-ray.
But this was an early release.
This was this is the second movie we ever did a 4K scan on.
Wow.
The first is probably an even stranger one called A Clockwork Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Good title.
It's the softcore version is on a double feature with Jekyll and Hyde Portfolio on DVD. Yeah. That was also like a limited edition Blu-ray that sold out eventually.
Uh-huh.
That has the hardcore version on it. But those are the first two things we ever scanned in 4K.
Did the director of Runaway Nightmare, was he trying to do a weird Jimmy Stewart, or is that how he sounds?
Everyone in it is dubbed. by themselves.
Huh.
But it was all dubbed.
Okay.
So possibly.
Yeah, possibly he was in the dub guard. Actually, this would be better as Jimmy Stewart.
But that actually is how he sounds.
Really? Okay.
Yeah,
it was really odd, that part of it.
If you want to see a little bit more of him, he also turns up as Candace Rileson's brother at the beginning of Pets.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay, so for the completists.
Yeah.
Would you consider redoing any – because you just mentioned that it eventually sold out. So I assume this is one that you had for a long time. But would you eventually consider redoing some of these early titles, maybe with the slipcase treatment or kind of like with some sort of spoofed up packaging?
Not stuff that was like marketed as limited that's already gone, because then it kind of defeats the purpose of having done it as a limited to begin with.
Gotcha.
We've talked about on numerous occasions just making slipcovers for titles that have sold well, that people have asked about, which is surprising to me because – and this is probably unexpected, but I'm not a physical media collector at all.
Yeah.
Like I watch movies. I want to digest them and think about them, but I don't need to have copies on discs.
Mm-hmm.
But – people love slipcases.
Oh, this is where me and Jeff talk about this all the time.
We do. And I will say, even it's been years, we've sold so many, but still putting out Christmas Evil, Madman, Ice Cream Man, Jack Frost, all and Demon Wind all in a row. And certainly Demon Wind and Jack Frost have had slipcovers already.
Mm-hmm.
But people love grabbing those again. Like people – like they Christmas Evil and Madman have been out for a while. But people – those are the first titles that people grab. And we sold out of Madman every convention.
Wow.
It's like – and I'm always amazed. I'm like, I would think everyone has it at this point. No, people grab – it's one of the – they grab that. Slaughterhouse is another one.
Yeah.
So I would definitely see down the line – if not even slipcovers, some sort of collected package of like the greatest hits of Vinegar Syndrome, however you want to do it. Those 5 years, five film discs.
Oh, yeah.
People love those too. Obviously, volume one way gone, but volume two, three, and four, people like going back to those because those were only on DVD beforehand. And I think a lot of people who discover us from those bigger titles, from the stuff that they see that they already know.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, I'll grab these. Can you recommend two others that I don't know?
Hmm.
And then they start to kind of get into us more from that. So it's a good gateway, those gateway movies that people kind of recognize for us.
What's the relationship to Amazon? Because what I really like is the discovery is only a couple months ago where it's like, oh, if I type in Vinegar Syndrome or if I type in AGFA or if I type in Blue Underground, I suddenly find some really great movies on this. It's as simple as that on Amazon Prime. But Vinegar Syndrome, it often seems like you guys have stuff on there. Not everything, but it seems to be a pretty good – how is that? How do you decide?
I mean, are you talking about just for –
Just for streaming. Oh, yeah, no, streaming. I'm talking about like to stream on Prime.
Well, no, Amazon is actually getting worse and worse.
Oh, it is.
And they are.
Like the deal for you guys getting worse and worse, you mean?
No, they're just pulling stuff for everyone.
Yeah.
Like they did a big purge about 2 years ago, and now they're back at it.
Yeah, bummer.
And every so often we get titles pulled. Like the theory is that since they're hosting everything, and as such, they're paying for the storage. It's not like, you know, for us making like $100 a month on a title might be great, but for them, it's not even pocket change.
Do you guys work with Shudder? Have you had any titles on Shudder?
Yeah, we've listened to a bunch of stuff on Shudder, like at least a dozen or so.
I'd love to
titles.
See just your whole thing on Shudder, like, you know, another service that delves more into exploitation.
Demon Wind's on there, Madman, Blood Harvest, a bunch of stuff.
Blood Harvest.
Yeah, especially I'm bringing that up because you said you weren't a physical media, which, and there are still a lot of people who just want to watch it streaming, so it's always a bummer. And some of these movies, you are reticent to buy the first time because if you have no idea what it is, and besides the cool cover, you might want to watch it first.
Like, we do get those people who watch it on streaming and come to the table and say, I just saw this a couple of weeks ago. I'd love to get the disc. Mm. And there are those who kind of like – who make that list. And the blind buy, I think – the slipcovers people will blind buy, right? Mm-hmm. That's the one thing you could always sell on. And sometimes on the older titles, they'll blind buy if it's similar enough to other things. But sometimes pushing those, you know, those kind of more obscure titles, you know, a sugar cookies, for instance, is a hard blind buy for somebody. Buddies is a hard blind buy for somebody. You know, like, we've got those movies that people should see, but it's hard for us to sell on that because it's like, man, like an AIDS drama, like, and I've got like these, I got Splatter University, and I've got, you know, The Uninvited. It's hard to make that kind of connection. So, yeah, the streaming helps in that way. I can only do so much. I try to lead people to the promised land, but I can't make them enter it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, but again, people come back. You know, we do so many conventions on the West Coast that we see people constantly now every couple of months, and they'll come by and say, hey, I love these titles. Now I believe in you. Tell me what I need to get.
Mm. Yeah, and you have a pretty – just from what I've seen and even our first interactions before we were friendly, you have a pretty good barometer when people come to the table and start telling you about their tastes.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to immediately just have this encyclopedic knowledge of like, all right, these are the five that I think might be up your alley, which is really
you can
cool.
Read people pretty well, and it helps because they're wearing the horror shirts, the t-shirts. You can tell by the guy's shirt. Like, I had a guy come up in a Joe Spinell shirt. I'm like, I can help you out, sir. Yeah. You know, that's very easy
that's
for me.
Easy, yeah.
But yeah, other people, it depends. Like, I will tell you this. Climax of Blue Power are the Ruffy porn we put out. I had a very nice woman and her boyfriend come up, and she kept looking at it. And she's just like, what is this? And I was like, how do you feel about a man who's basically too short to become a cop? So he decides to wear a cop uniform and drive around a police car and pick up women and then basically handcuff them, make them strip in the rain, and then he witnesses a murder. And she's like, I don't know. And I'm like, I feel like you have to see it. And I said, I promise you, you won't ever forget it. That's what I can promise you. And she's, and like the boyfriend looks at it and she looks at it and she's like, I don't know. And I went to work and I spent 5 minutes on her. I ended up making that sale. It was only a $20 sale and I made several $100 sales, but I am proud of that particular sale.
Man, Jeff's pitch game is
– yeah, that is total used car sales and maneuvers. I love it. That's amazing. Well, one of the biggest titles that I haven't watched the release yet, but it's a movie I love, was your Incubus one. How did that sell? Because that's actually a really great
movie. Very well. Yeah, the slipcover is gone on that. We sold out of the regular edition at Monsterpalooza. It's a title that, again, like, the cover's great, first of all, and the fact that, like, people love the whole concept. It's easy to pair with something like a Demon Wind or anything like that, but because it has Cassavetes, it's a good movie.
Yeah,
you know, it has a legitimately great story, you know, and it's got a solid kind of feel to it. And people don't necessarily, I think, recognize it because the title is so generic in a lot of ways. There's a lot of movies called The Incubus. Mm-hmm. But it's like once you start pitching it to people, they're like, I really want to see this. And then other people are just like – and it's a movie that you can let other customers refer to people at the table. So you'll see somebody holding the guy like, hey, you should watch that, man. Like, yeah. I've seen that like a couple of times. And you let the customers sell the other customer on it. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those titles that will do the work for you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Death by Temptation.
Yes.
Because you'd put this out recently and then Shudder done the great documentary Horror Noir, and I was pleasantly surprised to see it pop up in there, and I was like, oh, cool. So what can you tell us about that?
There's one? Another one that kind of was like a trauma title that doesn't really fit into the trauma, you know, aspect really.
I disagree with that.
Really?
I think that it definitely does, because keep in mind that trauma and 2019 or 18 is not the same as trauma in 1990.
True.
And in the – there's a lot of very, I guess by contemporary expectations, weird stuff in the trauma catalog from that period. And trauma is very proud of having been associated with Death by Temptation.
I would think – you know, I mean it is a great movie – in terms of its inner, you know, it's Ernest Dickerson shot it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a great cast in it. And, you know, Samuel Jackson's in it, Kadeem Hardison's in it. It's a very solid, you know, there's, and I would not put it at the level of something like Ganja and Hess, but you could make a comparisons to that. And it's another title that people kind of pass over a little bit because they don't really recognize it. Mm. I think they may have seen it at the video store when it came out, but they don't remember that title or they don't associate necessarily our packaging with it. But it's another one that I kind of push at people, especially if they're picking up, you know, other of the kind of blaxploitation films, especially like something like Welcome Home, Brother Charles. I think that's a great, you know, double feature. But it's one of those that I think is at a level, again, where you're going to – like The Killing Kind, you're going to go back to it sooner than you would some of those other titles or maybe the Friday night movies.
Had we seen – Penitentiary and Welcome Back, Brother Charles.
No, I wasn't with you, but I know you went to that.
But that was after they were here last,
I think.
Okay, yeah, they were amazing.
Yeah, Welcome
amazing
Home, Brother,
double feature.
Welcome Home, Brother Charles, and Emma May is.
I still haven't seen that one.
Okay. Oh man, yeah. That movie, and I pushed that at people. I said, look, I can sell you on Welcome Home, Brother Charles. That's an easy sell for me. Emma May is legitimately this fascinating story. That's almost like a Charles Burnett movie, mm-hmm. you know, but at the same time has this kind of like, you know, L.A. like crime.
Well, they're at the same time, right? I mean, yeah. That yeah. part of the L.A. Rebellion group.
Shot in 76, I believe, and then Killer Sheep is probably shooting around the same time.
And there's moments in Brother Charles that like where somebody's just walking down the street. It looks like you could just walk right into Killer Sheep or My Brother's Wedding or whatever. It's just – seems like the same.
Definitely. And so you take that kind of Charles Burnett aesthetic and you combine it with this kind of crime drama, you know, kind of like almost like aspects of like a Michael Mann movie. Mm. And it's a really interesting duality. That
so that's one of your titles as well, MMA?
Yeah. Welcome Home, Brother Charles.
With it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you get both. You get Welcome Home, Brother Charles and MMA on that same disc. So basically early Jamal Fanaka.
Yeah.
And that's an easy sell for me to pair with A Penitentiary and A Penitentiary too. Yeah. I think if you can get all four of those basically.
Oh, cool.
Can we talk about how sales increased whenever we talk about Bloodhook? I mean, like, they got to go through the roof, I'm sure. Whenever Rob and I speak about
it, I still have the glory of the longer cut, the glory of Bloodhook.
Like, I think that the longer cut makes it even more confusing.
Yes,
which is amazing.
That's what you got to watch.
And no one in the production seems to understand why the thing runs nearly 2 hours. But it actually fills in some gaps and it makes the pacing better,
yeah.
Perhaps.
Right. If there's any Fisherman Giallo you need to see.
Where was Bloodhook? What was that? Bloodhook was shot
in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Yeah. Okay, so Hayworth, you'll appreciate this.
As was Bloodbeat, I believe.
As was Bloodbeat.
Yeah. Oh, right. Blood Harvest. Now we have a triple.
Wisconsin triple feature.
Now I have a triple feature. No, because actually Josh Miller, who does Friday Night Frights, he came over and borrowed Blood Harvest and Bloodhook because they're a Wisconsin. He wanted to do Wisconsin double feature. Josh, you need to come and pick up Blood. What was the third one? Bloodbeat.
Bloodbeat, yeah, the Christmas one, yeah.
Complete the trilogy.
And the Blood Wisconsin trilogy, yes.
And then you can throw in not one of your titles.
Box set idea right there.
The Pit is also shot in Wisconsin, even though it's a Knexploitation. Yeah. So you can throw in The Pit if you want to have some fun in there.
Well, what's amusing about the Blood trilogy is that I guess someone came into either some convention or into the store that we now have in our building in Connecticut and was asking – dead serious, because I've made this joke before, like the Wisconsin Blood trilogy, and was asking about them as though they were related films.
Oh cool. So maybe we need to create that history.
And it's interesting because they're all so different in so many ways. Blood Harvest is like this rural horror film.
Yeah.
That feels so, you know, it has a loneliness to it, this melancholy.
Tiny Tim without the clown makeup is more terrifying than anything.
Are we going to do this triple? Because I haven't seen two of the three. I've only seen Bloodbeat, so I'm kind of in for this.
It'll be a let's do it on a Sunday, but it'll be a long Sunday.
So the long cut of Bloodhook,
yeah,
Blood Harvest,
yep,
and Bloodbeat. And Bloodbeat's the movie to end on.
Is that the order, you think?
I think so, because you're ending on this kind of sad family drama Christmas where everyone's kind of like, we have a lot of unresolved issues. Oh, a ghost samurai has showed up to bring us all together and kind of overcome all of this.
You need to be really awake for Bloodhook. Lots of coffee tomorrow.
Start with Bloodhook, then go to Blood Harvest, and then Bloodbeat.
All right, there you go. Blood Trilogy.
Yeah. And then just set aside an hour to just think and just kind of have that time to reflect.
Just meditate.
Let's just sit in the room in silence for an hour once this triple feature's over together. Like
eating cheese curds. We'll be like, oi, I'm in.
Here's a title you just put out that I don't know anything about it. The Corruption of Chris Miller.
Yes.
I think I talked about that one last time.
You did?
I really like that film. It's, I think, one of the best Spanish jolly period.
Oh cool.
Directed by Javier Bardem's uncle.
Yes.
Juan
Antonio Bardem.
Oh, cool.
And it's, I'm assuming at least one of you has seen Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll.
I know that title. Is that the Irish one?
No, it's another Spanish giallo. Okay. It's a Paul Naschy giallo.
Okay.
Which is widely considered like the best Spanish giallo, like truly Spanish, not a co-production. Corruption of Chris Miller is a more highbrow film. But it's...
I'm seeing a lot of Charlie Chaplin stills. Somebody dresses Chaplin?
The killer dresses like Charlie Chaplin in the opening scene. Wow.
Well, it's sold to me.
It's more of a... Like if you've seen things like The Night Digger, the Roald Dahl scripted film, it kind of has a vibe like that. Like it's about an older woman and a younger woman who are both miserable together in a house, and then like the strange, attractive young man shows up and... Basically, they want to seduce him. He maybe wants to seduce them, but he's also maybe the serial killer roaming the countryside.
Mm. Yep. Crazy Women in a Big House movies.
Whoa. I love
always
this.
Always amazing.
Yeah.
It's the first official giallo we've put out.
Is it?
I believe so. We've put out things that have been inspired by giallo, but I think this is the first real giallo. And so if you like it, we can put out more.
There's plenty more coming.
Yeah.
Not like... I shouldn't say plenty. There's some more coming.
There will be plenty more if you buy Corruption of Christmas.
Ah, there you go.
So that wasn't the last...
This is an April release. The official street date is still like a couple weeks away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
When is this?
But
we can watch an advanced copy?
Yes. I just got this
no
one.
Pressure? Okay.
And if you... And, you know, always when it comes to like conventions and everything, we try to get this stuff out if we can and have it available for people... If we got it in time. That way they don't have to worry about ordering online, because people will come up and be like, I didn't pre-order these. And like, we have them, so don't worry. You know, we have the slips. Because you can't – people will ask. They'll come up and be like, I don't get the slip from Amazon. And it's like, yeah, you get it from us.
Yeah.
You got to contact us. You got to buy it from the website. Like, and so we try to reflect like that helps us.
Buy direct.
More.
Always buy direct.
Yes. Always buy direct. Yeah. That's how we get you all the nice stuff. You know, and or if it's from us personally at the conventions or whether it's on the website. But we're going to more and more conventions now.
Yeah.
We are at, you know, like James, you know, from Connecticut was talking about it. He's going to 3 or 4 a month. So wherever you are in the country, if you got a convention by you and it's anywhere near like even a mid-sized convention, we'll be there with a table.
Right.
So know that like we're there to – you can buy – and we carry everything. We bring all of our inventory with us.
And
so,
you guys will be at Texas Frightmare, which is where we're going.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Pitch me on Grandmother's House.
That was the first title that sold out at Monster Palooza.
Really?
It's gone by Saturday afternoon.
I see Brink Stevens. I'm in. I see that cover.
She remains clothed the entire time.
Oh,
and she's very proud of that.
What is it? What's the vibe?
It's I just wrote the copy for our newsletter the other day where I always try to be sort of snarky. And I think I described it as if you always wanted to see the kid from Cry Wilderness, which is being chased around orange groves by Brink Stevens. This is the film for you.
I'm in.
And the cover had that old 80s kind of look to it, and people really responded to that. They kept people kept picking up, and everyone did.
Directed by the co-writer of Waterworld.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm definitely in. Let's do this.
And produced by Nico.
Yeah, produced by Nico Mastarakis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So while we're talking about other April things, I want to just briefly
share my love for Darkroom, which has not been doing all that well relative to the other ones. And I'm very happy that we got that one. There's also a Nico Mastorakis film. And it's kind of like Blood Harvest, but with a higher body count and more setups.
We describe it as kind of a giallo, late 80s slasher kind of movie, like an American giallo kind
of
thing.
But still, I mean, looking at it, still a couple that look like Tenebrae-ish.
Yeah.
Just kind of clean bathrooms and bloody, yeah. And then it looks cool.
That's nice.
But see, that's the thing. Some covers, like a title like that, I never would have bought that one but without having this conversation. Now I'm interested.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's one of our better covers, honestly.
It's also just hard to know what it is, like, and without talking to someone. Sometimes
and I can get it. You look at that uninvited cover. You got that cat and that chip, and it's next to that, and it's between that and Splatter University, you know, or the what's the New Year one?
Bloody New Year.
That cover too. I mean, those just jump out at you. You know, and we did a lot of work this past weekend at Monsterpalooza, trying to rearrange covers so that people are like, okay, well, get your eyes on this, but look at this too. Like, we tried to put things around things to get people's attention more. But yeah, I mean, people are always going to be drawn to those immediate ones that have that kind of group. And Darkroom, unfortunately, it's a nice cover, but it doesn't really grab you like some of those.
This is the discussion that we have periodically, because I'm usually the dissenting voice in covers. It didn't say to me when I looked at it, like, this is about a mystery killer murdering people. And that's really what the movie is. Like, it's
and the title won't tell you that, so you need something to tip you off. Yeah. What's that one you're looking at, Rob?
Oh, Bloody New Year,
Oh, yeah, that's right. Bloody New Year had some fun sequences in it. Like, some of the more surreal stuff in that was interesting.
Yep. People grab that, and, you know, they just – I mean, that cover just jumps out at you. Yeah. As soon as I opened that box and looked at it, I was like, oh, this will sell. You know, I won't have any issues with this one.
Yeah, that was one that I'd always known, the VHS box, and to me it was a very pleasant surprise when I checked out your version. Another one I want to
– stupid photo posts or photo images, not all that good.
One of my I don't think I had seen this by the time you guys were on, but another pleasant surprise was Sudden Fury.
Yes, like, also a big seller.
What a cool not really genre, I don't know if I would call it genre, but a really, really cool movie, which is basically this couple is on a drive and they kind of get in a fight, and basically the husband in a fit of anger turns on his wife and tries to kill her. And then what is it? Another guy drives by, or is he hitchhiker? Yeah, I can't remember.
There's a good Samaritan. Basically, like, the husband crashes the car deliberately, hoping to he will escape, but he'll leave his wife to die.
Yeah.
But unfortunately,
a calculated ploy.
Every time, a good Samaritan happens to be driving by and tries to save her, and the husband finds out, so he tries to implement
him. And it's a Canucksploitation movie.
Yeah, it's a Canadian film. Yeah. It's a tax shelter film.
It works really well with even though it's a title we don't have, is Death Weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's
those two.
Yeah, it's also
sounds a little bit like Hitchhiker, though, too, the David Hess, Frank and Nero one.
No, because it's different much Daniel more Man. Of like a Hitchcock deliberately Hitchcock inspired Wrong Man movie.
Oh,
yeah,
where
yeah.
It's about, very cool. Like, this the Good Samaritan realizes that he may actually be implicated for the murder.
Yeah, because then it becomes kind of this cat and mouse thing between the two of them, the Good Samaritan and the husband, because the husband goes back to, you know, he goes to like a farm, he walks and basically like, oh, this guy tried to kill my wife. And so like when he's coming, this the people at the farm, the family's assuming this is the bad guy, even though they've already got the bad guy. Like, you know what I mean? It's Hitchcocking. It was just a real surprise and people, a really cool
movie. And people
movie.
Found it really fast and they really respond to it. And the one they didn't find as fast that came out the same time was Beware My Brethren.
Okay.
Which is another one I love, just this kind of weird religious horror movie. You know, this British film which has some slasher elements to it, but has this deeper, more psychological, creepy religious context to it that surprised me, that came out of left field, because I thought I was getting kind of one of those mod British, you know, kind of like serial killer movies with maybe, you know, a little bit of nudity, a little bit of gore, just a guy going around killing people in like late 60s, early 70s England. And it's not that at all. It actually has like – there's all this kind of other material there that was – it's very juicy to kind of chew on if you're done with it.
From the director of the Peter Cushing Corruption.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. That's
good. Oh, wow.
Do you guys ever get approached now that you've just been around longer by new filmmakers with like indie films trying to put their indie film out that might be in this kind of vein?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. And you have yet to ever do one, right?
No.
Yeah. I don't really do modern releases. Yeah.
Part of it is that a lot of these are shot on digital, and we're a restoration company in addition to being this distributor, and so that's how we usually introduce us. Like, look, we work with film and everything. We try to help where we can, and we try to say, look, you may want to take it to this place, and you may want to take it to this place. And here's who we know. But that has been coming up more and more of each time we meet with someone. They're like, I love your guys' stuff. Will you watch this Vimeo clip of this movie I made? And it's like, we'll watch it, but it's really can't. It's not really for us.
The one recent film that we've put out is a movie called Hangs Upon Nothing, which was one of the Etiquette releases. And
the surfer that, one.
Yeah, that's like a landscape film about surfing.
Okay.
Where the guy who made it, he is like a lifelong surfer, and he built his own underwater camera rig, and he shot everything himself. He edited everything. He did the soundtrack. He designed the art. He also did the recreate. He does art for us otherwise. He did the Ice Cream Man and Demon Wind covers. Okay.
Go get those Etiquette titles, because I think Some Call It Love and we're out of. And we talked about that last time. But there's still a few – Catch My Soul and the Hopper documentary, American Dreamer.
Yeah, I
promise you, those are going to be in 3 or 4 years. People are going to be desperate to find those films. Hmm. That Hopper film, especially American Dreamer by L.M. Kit Carson, is a fascinating thing. Especially if you've seen Last Movie and you watch that indicator, that big indicator box they just put out, or even the American, I think it was Arbelos put out American Dreamer is a perfect companion piece of that, and that. We're not making any more of those. So go on.
So what's the relationship to Etiquette?
Oh, it's just a same different company. Imprint.
It's our sub.
It's
yeah,
like
sub-label.
Severn versus Intervision.
Okay. Okay. Yep. Yep. Same thing.
So yeah, that's something. And I put out a couple of them at the table. No one really gravitated towards them, but I think that American Dreamer is definitely something you're going to want if you're becoming a fan of that early 70s Dennis Hopper kind of aesthetic and him just talking to the camera and being there. That's something you need to have. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the shop in Connecticut. I'm from Connecticut myself, and I told my dad, who's still up in Meriden, and I told him you guys had a thing down there. So is it a fully functioning shop? I
mean, it is. Really? They're open every day.
Huh.
And it's
Brandon and James who have been our longest employees is not really an accurate word, even though it's technically what they are.
Yeah.
But, their family is what they are.
But they, so they
the way of just going, you're volunteering.
They basically run the company.
Yeah. Nice.
So,
do you get people to come up from New York? And
yeah, that's the biggest thing is there's no place in New York to buy discs anymore. Right. There's no Kim's. There's no Virgin.
Yeah.
There's no place to get discs. And especially on those boutique labels and everything, you're looking for those types of titles, and you not necessarily don't want to get them on, just from the website or everything. And we also deal a lot in VHS tapes and records.
Mm.
It's a place to go, and we have arcade games. We have a lot of stuff there.
Oh, cool.
And it's become this kind of – and they keep adding to it and building it up into kind of Brandon and James's brainchild of this place where anything you could be interested in as a collector or just someone who's interested in these kind of artifacts can go and hang out.
Nice.
And they have a lot of they have a lot of rare stuff.
Yeah.
They have a lot of people who come in and like, hey, I've got like a huge box of tapes, that I'm trying to unload. And you find the greatest stuff in there. And then we have actual Arrow titles on the shelf. We have actual, Vinegar Syndrome titles on the shelf. Severin, all of that.
Dread stuff too, thankfully.
Yes.
It's one of the only places that carries them physically.
Yeah. So, it's become a location for people and it's great. And it allows them also to just kind of, again, to see us, And people, they travel to there too. They're like, oh, I'm going to be in New York or I'm going to be, in Boston or everything. And it's a train right away on the East Coast. And so it's a good location for that.
Yeah, what about – I'm out there. I'll check it out.
In L.A., we've been waiting for a couple of years for Alamo Draft House. I think the train has left the station. Yeah, for real.
It's in progress.
But like I went up to the San Francisco one just in passing one day, and it was cool because in the foyer – they actually had like a video store kind of set up.
Yes.
And I think that would be a great kind of pop-up space to just pop, have discs occasionally. But also I was thinking about like it would be nice to see some of these films theatrically, even if it's just like one day screenings. Well, it'd be a great chance.
AGFA handles are theatrical.
Okay, they are directly related.
And it's all a matter of what the theaters want to show. And we don't own theatrical on every film we put out. Yeah. So – we can't always authorize screenings. Like, for instance, we don't have theatrical on Incubus or Uninvited. That's retained by the rights owner. So, you know, there's movies that would probably get some theatrical play, but because we don't have rights, we don't have the ability to offer them. Mm. And then there's a lot of other stuff that we do have rights on that no one seems to want to play theatrically.
But, I mean, maybe Draft House will be a different mentality. You know, it's kind of place that it's multi-screen, I believe. So
Having films screen at Draft House, specific like the various locations, that's generally easier. But it tends to be the same movies over and over and over again.
Yeah,
and that's disappointing. But
It's close to us here. It's going to be just down the street from here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're happily introduce them.
That'd be great. And I think that if we can get. Yeah, especially the movies, the titles that, like we talk about on here, that maybe aren't as familiar to people, if they can screen at Alamo or other places like that, it certainly helps in a lot of ways. And people get more familiar. People are willing to go to the theater to see it, you know, than they necessarily might be to buy a disc, which is totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
What are you guys most excited about for the future, for the rest of this year?
Ooh, I won't say anything. I'll let Joe handle that.
All right. I mean, one that I sort of pseudo-announced like 6 months ago, a film that we're putting out in June, it seems, that I'm very much looking forward to is The Passing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 7 or 9, the director isn't really quite sure, year production that started in the mid-70s and finished in the mid-80s that in its throughout its production also spawned 2 short films made from the work in progress feature. One of which is an educational film about the elderly.
Which could be creepy in its own way.
That's kind of amazing.
No, it's like a soul transference type.
Thing. Those old people always want to get out of their old people bodies. They can't just deal with it.
See the cover,
So this has
been out on VHS? Or?
It came out in a lousy DVD a few years ago, like 10 years ago, probably more likely. And it looked like shit because it was taken off of a tape master. But
tell us how you really feel about that DVD, Joe. Jeez.
The director's not fond of it either. Apparently didn't even have it only had one channel of the sound mix as well. we got that one, and then one that I've been sort of waiting for the right opportunity to announce is a film that I'm personally quite excited about, probably more so than I should be, The Vineyard by James Hong.
Yeah. You can hear the excitement in his voice, can't you? He's jumping out of his seat.
The one person who's not here saw it recently, right? She must have seen Becca on VHS or something.
Yeah.
And she liked it a lot,
And she talked about it quite at length, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's just it's a VHS cover, I just remember very, very well.
And, of course, biggest news, halfway to Black Friday sale, end of May. We're going to have specific...
May 24th through 27th.
We'll have specific titles.
Yeah. As with every year, there's going to be 2 titles which will be announced when the sale goes live. And as I've said elsewhere, one is horror, the other one is not.
What's the not horror title? Because we won't tell anyone.
I will say this
tightened up around here.
Pre-order people. I cannot say this enough. Those people, I understand. It was like as soon as Cutting Class that hit, people like, I'll just wait. And then they just wait too long and then they lose it.
I've suffered that. I have an account now.
Okay.
I'm all set. I got an email about what was the email that I got about the website? It got something about like
the website going down for a while,
but then it was like start an account so you could log in easier.
We reconfigured our website to make it more easily searchable and less buggy.
Ordered the Uninvited real quick here.
Signing up.
I
can't hear another sob story at the table of like, I didn't get the blood harvest slip. I understand.
But it's inevitable. Like,
you have to pre-order.
On the fan – I guess there's 2, but the main Facebook fan page, there was a guy who was saying like, I don't know if I'm going to order Flesh Pond on 42nd Street. I know it's limited, but I guess I'll just wait until Memorial Day.
Mm.
And it hasn't sold out yet. It's probably not going to sell out before Memorial Day, but still, like, he's going on about how he's just going to wait and wait and wait. And I know that if it were to possibly sell out, he would bitch.
Or worse, I don't want somebody to walk in the bathroom and this guy's just like hanging there from like the shower because he didn't get it, you know?
Like,
you know,
like in a slipcase.
Yeah, like it's just pre-order.
That would be great press.
I'll just say it happened. It happened. It was a real thing.
Pre-order your titles on the slips. You know, we've got so much coming out and they will sell out. They just do. Like every slip sells out eventually. And it's like I can't help everyone. And occasionally a slip will slip through and somebody might find one. But you don't want to pay $200 on eBay for this stuff. No. Don't give it to the bootleggers.
Yeah. I have a pretty good feeling that at least one of the surprise titles will probably sell out quite quickly. Huh. So
wow.
So save the money now. Save it now and set it aside or get the package. That's the best idea. Is go ahead and just get the yearly package from us when you can.
Which you'll be able to do over Memorial Day for the balance of the year. That'll be June through December.
That gets you every title each month. Mm. And you're guaranteed it and you're guaranteed your slips. And you'll make it through. You'll make it through the year and you're done. And it's great. And then you re-up every year.
The final word that I can have on the sale is the more money we make, the bigger films we can buy. And yeah,
that makes sense.
And, yeah, it's like
it's common sense.
Do you people want Black Room or not? Do you want Black Room? Because we want Black Room.
But right? I mean, it's like it seems like an obvious statement to make, but it really is true. Like we invest everything we make back into acquisitions and trying to get more movies, more diverse films. Like we're putting out a bunch more Euro titles now. Mm-hmm. In part because Euro films are more expensive than American films, basically across the board. And there's one Euro title in particular, which I'm not going to announce yet, although if you have me back before October, maybe I'll announce it then.
Oh.
It's a very good one that I think will make people who are of the who enjoy Sova films. Oh. It's not a Sova film. Yeah. But if you like movies like The Church – mm-hmm. And
everyone's on their edge of their seat right now, Joe. I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, this is. I don't even know if you know which one I'm talking
about. I do know. You and I have talked about it.
Maybe,
but I
don't think you really do. Let down. You want to make it real?
I'll say this: Joe's right. Everything we do want to buy better titles. The only thing we have to get is we do have to gas up Joe's solid gold car occasionally. Yeah. That's the only thing that goes into any of this. Everything else goes back into the company.
I'm about to buy my 10th condo. Nice.
Nice. Gold all chain. Those Madman Blu-rays. Yeah. Christmas Evil. How many titles do you think you're at this point?
270-something.
Wow.
And four a month, you know, every month.
Yep. Do you have one of every single one?
There are things
you probably
I
do because you have the overstock from the conventions.
I do. So I'm not going to tell you where I live because of that. Because there are things I find upstairs in my house with all those overstock and all that stuff where I'm just like, oh, like I have some of these, you know, and I ship and sometimes they get shipped back and sometimes they don't. But I end up with a lot of the stuff and I bring it to conventions and I try to make sure that we have plenty of it. But I probably do have everything. But again, don't show up at my house and or break in or anything.
I'm going to be knocking at your back door for that mausoleum slip I missed out on because I didn't pre-order anything.
Wow.
I'll hook you up, man.
Thanks, dude.
I got the slip.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, this is great. We're looking forward to the sale and whatever else you guys announce. I mean, it's always – I mean, that's the thing I Elric talks about all the time. Like, we think our knowledge of the genre is vast between the four of us in the room, but – you'll always surprise us with something we've never heard of.
Hey, Javier Bardem's got an uncle that directed a movie.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly.
I know.
That's cool.
Crazy.
That's some trivia I could take with me.
And always please come see us at the conventions. We love talking to people. Give James a hug. He's a big hugger. Mm-hmm. You know, that guy's on the road every weekend, you know, at all these different conventions. And some of them are huge, like Texas Frightmare. Yeah. And some of them are very small regional stuff. And he drives to them with all this stuff in the back of his car. And he's doing it because he loves to do it. And he wants to talk to people. And he wants to sell discs. So
that guy's out there. Do you know what the next couple shows will be after this airs? Oh. I mean, obviously Texas Frightmare we mentioned.
That's a big one.
There might be something in the coming weeks. But yeah, Texas Frightmare is the next really big one.
Cool. Yeah, and then and obviously regional. Like I said,
check the website. Yep. Every convention is listed on the website. Every event that we're aware of, whether it's a screening or anything else related to the films, is all is as long as we know about it, going to be listed. Sign up for emails because they tend to get listed in the emails as well. Mm-hmm.
And obviously, if you're in the LA area, we'll be back for Son of Monsterpalooza at the end of the summer. We always do real well there, and I love meeting everyone because that's the serious fan show. Like, there's a lot of people who just kind of come by for Monsterpalooza, out for the weekend. The Son of Monsterpalooza, that's the hardcore fans that come to the table and always have a great time, and I love meeting those people. So please come on by for that.
Great.
Right on.
Awesome.
Jeff, Joe, thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
You know, support Vinegar Syndrome and visit vinegarsyndrome.com, and we'll see you guys soon enough.
Yes. Thank you so much for having us again.